Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Eric, did you think we'd be leading with Jeff Jarrett on today's Dynamite Post Show?
No, and I'm living in a nightmare. God, do I hate Jeff Jarrett. I have always hated Jeff Jarrett. I hated him in WWE as a performer. I don't know him as a person. Maybe perfectly lovely for all I know. I disliked him in TNA. He's selfish. He doesn't want to do jobs. I disliked him in WCW the most under Vince Russo. Oh, my God, was that horrible. The dying days of WCW. And here he is in AEW. I'm just shaking my head.
I am definitely on the side of being more of a fan of Jeff Jarrett's promo tonight and his inclusion in Dynamite than most. I'm not saying I would have voted for it because I think AEW has better places to spend their bandwidth and focus. And I've certainly been, a critic of Jeff Jarrett over the years in several, but not all of the areas you just emphatically listed. And you're not wrong on many of them, but I thought that, okay, you put aside his history. That was a pretty good promo. And it lays the groundwork for this Khan family achieving something he didn't and him being bitter because of his, three generations of family members being involved in the business. I'm not sure that's a money storyline that's going to connect in 2022, but for what he was trying to do, I thought it was a good Jeff Jarrett promo.
Sure, okay, and let's put heat, go away heat, possibly, on a 55-year-old guy who's been sort of a wrestling con man and grifter and weaseler and weaseling his way in and out of jobs and not putting people over and, oh, just why? And to put him with Jay Lethal, who, Jay Lethal is a perfectly fine gatekeeper heel who can teach young guys how to work and lose to the baby faces. That's not what we got tonight. I realize that's part of the story, but, I wanted Darby to win because he's ideally someone AEW is building around. Instead, we get to put over Jeff Jarrett. Why did they put Cole Carter in the Sting mask? Wouldn't it have been simpler, streamlined storytelling? You just put Jeff Jarrett in the Sting mask? That might actually have been somewhat cool, at least. Cooler than how they did it. It was like this superfluous fake-out move. And I guess they're putting Cole Carter with that team to be the designated pin eater. But, yeah, the show started off in such a negative place for me. I'm not sure I ever recovered.
I think they want Cole Carter in that group, but it's bad to do a reveal leads to that much silence. I mean, you've got to think about how that's going to look on TV. And I know they followed up with, Jarrett and that kind of, it just sort of said, okay, it put that in the past and didn't seem all that important because Jeff Double J Jarrett's coming out to his old TNA theme song even. So it wasn't like a lasting thing, but certainly they would have been smart enough not to have that be the end of the segment. It's Cole Carter. Oh my God. I don't know. I mean, Jeff Jarrett is kind of like Stephanie McMahon sometimes, over the years where I'm like, yeah, kind of miss him. And it's up to Jeff to not have this be the case. After about 3 weeks, you're like, oh God. Yeah. Sometimes there's some overexposure and things don't necessarily sustain themselves, but I am open-minded to this working, even if it's not, like I said, how I would spend my Dynamite bandwidth. Because, I don't think they're going to do anything with TNA Impact Wrestling with this, but because that's sort of just not part of that anymore and all that. But there's history there. This Jeff did try to do what Tony Khan accomplished almost immediately. And Jeff, can make the case. We lay the foundation. We pave the road, as Bully Ray would say. For this to happen and all that, and just be bitter and get some heat for that. I mean, it's a little JBL-esque, it's like coming out there and talking about all the slackers and using all the, the 2017 Fox News owning the libs trite insults that are just, you know, eye rolling. And I mean, hopefully Jarrett doesn't go down that road. But it has that vibe of like this former world champion who was a main eventer, but not a, you know, mega successful centerpiece act, to say the least, coming back and just kind of, you know, working the mic. And I think his recent WWE exposure brought his name back to a little bit of prominence and gave a little more oomph to this as a surprise. But I mean, I don't know. I should run a Twitter poll, see how, if people like it, love it, hate it, or indifferent towards Jeff Jarrett. What do you think the result of that would be, Eric? Indifference or hate?
Well, I thought that I had the mainstream opinion on this, and I was so mad, I did something I never do, which is I replied to an official AEW tweet tonight. Ooh. Saying, you know, this is one of Tony's worst moves, and nobody likes Jeff Jarrett, and I quickly had to mute the thing so I could stop getting notified and my phone would stop blowing up. So it is possible I have the minority opinion on this. I don't see how. Are these people all just really young and didn't have to live through WCW and the Hogan, Jarrett, Russo, Swerve BS? That's just like one of the low points of the promotion. I mean, they would hit lower points after that, but I think maybe I lose this poll. 40% of people with me and maybe 60% not with me on Double J.
All right, we'll find out. People hear the clicking. I just threw a Elon Musk poll up. They'll start charging me for this probably next week because he's got to make up for overpaying for Twitter. But for now, we got a free poll up, so respond to it, people. If you're listening live, let us know what you think. We'll update you throughout. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a main event angle, but there is the aspect of AEW throwing so much out there. And I mean, you know, if it'll make you feel better, Eric, and a retired wrestler messaged me right after Dynamite saying, Tony has lost his effing mind. Slap nuts. That'll make all the people in the locker room unhappy with their lack of TV time. Blase Double J in 2022. So you're definitely not going to be alone. And I might regret my open-mindedness to this, but I wouldn't say I have a soft spot for Jeff Jarrett because, I mean, I have been, you know, critical of him for the reasons you listed over the years when he's been in charge. But I don't know. But I thought it was a good problem. I mean, it's got to be mid-card. If, you know, it's just a mid-card thing, and it might keep Sanjay Dutt from cutting promos, which can be a good thing.
Yeah, I don't. Is Dutt an option there? A Sanjay Dutt promo versus a Double J promo? I mean, I guess I sort of viewed Jarrett as this year's Dan Lambert, sort of a Dan Lambert replacement to come in and make fun of the AEW fan base and do that and make fun of the promotion and get kind of cheap heel heat. You know, crowd was yelling.
Breaking news, Mike McMahon has entered the conversation. He's not listening to us necessarily. He posted this 49 minutes ago, but I am just seeing it. He goes, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I don't mind Jeff Jarrett in AEW whatsoever. He looks to be in great shape. Maybe he can give Tony some booking advice. Ooh, that feels like a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, I assume he had tongue firmly in cheek about the booking advice. I mean, in my notes, when my anger was cresting, I wrote down, what's next? Bringing in Vince Russo to help with the booking. You know, I just don't want any part of any of that. The good news is most weeks, if I'm not co-hosting here, I can just, I could start Dynamite late, and then I can fast forward DVR and fast forward through the Jarrett segments, right? I mean, I've not
That's
done
true.
That Dynamite, a show I have historically liked almost every episode of and loved many episodes of. Tonight is on my Mount Rushmore of least favorite Dynamites ever.
Now, you're not required to watch Jeff Jarrett segments, but if you co-host again in a few weeks, and I expect that will happen, I mean, I'd like to get your thoughts on if you've changed your mind on Jarrett, if he's won you over, or you're like chewing through things at home to get through the stress of sitting through the segments. I don't want you to, at least at the beginning here, I don't want you to fast forward through them because we want to catch up with you and get your thoughts. I don't want to hear, oh, I don't watch them, so I'm not angry.
If I co-host, I won't. I it would be doing the listeners injustice if I fast-forwarded through Jeff Jarrett, but I can't promise on the off weeks.
Well, but I'm saying next time you're on, I want to know the progress of your thoughts weekly on Jeff Jarrett.
Oh.
And he might, too. He might be listening.
That's asking a lot, Wade.
Yes. Let's see. Greg Parks, longtime Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, host of the PWD Torch Daily Cast, Wrestling Night in America, says Jeff Jarrett continues to be the smartest man in the business. What a master. Landing on his feet with a paid gig here. So, yeah, so we want to hear from you. He has very strong go-away heat with me, says my name is Chris, in response to the Twitter poll. Should we see how the Twitter poll's going?
I mean, it's fairly soon, but I don't know. How many votes did
Twitter,
you get?
77 so far. 47% are indifferent. Which I should have predicted. I thought that would be the thing. There are four options: love it, solid addition, indifferent, or strongly disliked. So indifference ahead is number one at 47%. What do you think got the second most votes? Strongly disliked, solid addition, or love it?
Solid addition.
No, strongly disliked.
Okay.
So you're doing good, Eric, here. It's 79, almost 80%. My math is off here. Oh, now we got 83 votes, and now the number's flipped. Okay, that's easier math. Yay. 68% thumbs down and 32% roughly thumbs up here. But solid addition, 19%. Love it, 13%. Bruce Mitchell had a bit years ago in Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. He wrote a column where he wanted to hear from a Jeff Jarrett fan. He wanted to know if even one existed. It was a bit, he's like, seriously, is there anybody out there who considers themselves a Jeff Jarrett fan? And somebody did write in and say they were eventually, but I don't think we got more than one email on it.
Wow. Was it a relative of Jeff Jarrett, one that he was in the wrestling business with maybe? I don't know.
Come on. There has to be. You have to acknowledge there's probably a Jeff Jarrett fan out there that isn't a relative. I mean, let's not overdo it.
Yeah, I'm sure some people are young and don't know any better.
if you're
old, I bet you do know better.
More PW Torch staff chiming in here. We heard from Greg and Mike. Javier Machado says, I'm thumbs up on Double J. So I'm not going to check all the staffers' tweets, but mixed results so far.
I believe Rich Fan was marveling at Jeff's ability to get a paycheck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just. Yep. Who called him the smartest man at wrestling? That was Greg, right?
Yeah.
So Rich and Greg on the same page there. So we had the first of four or five segments out of six or seven that included a babyface getting attacked from behind at the end of a match.
Yeah.
AEW it's not quality control so much. It's just like, if you want things to have impact, don't do them over and over. It's just kind of silly. And then that's been not a top five problem for AEW, but worth bringing up. Darby gets laid out by a Jarrett guitar. After Jay Lethal beat him because of that. And then we got the promo with Jeff Jarrett. What do you think of this for Darby? You know, having a feud with Jarrett Lethal. I assume Cole Carter's in the mix because he'll be first up to lose to Darby. It's not main event, but it is Darby.
Yeah, I mean, I assume that I have not seen the Jeff Jarrett is all elite tweet up. It may be up. I just haven't seen it. Is this a short-term thing? Is this just to try and get people talking and build interest in the Full Gear pay-per-view that's just a short 17 days away, 2.5 weeks? I don't know. What I definitely don't want to see is Darby Allin putting over Jeff Jarrett. We saw Darby Allin putting over CM Punk, and the thinking would be if Punk was signed to a 3 or 4 or 5 year deal, eventually CM Punk would put over Darby Allin, and that's not going to happen now, I wouldn't think. And so I would hate to see Jeff Jarrett, who likes to weasel his way out of returning the favor and doing jobs and is known for being selfish. I would hate to see him beat one of the former, they used to use the term, four pillars of AEW and get the win over Darby and not put him over, because that would be very TNA-like of the AEW if that happened.
What was I going to just say? Now my mind went elsewhere. There was a tweet that I saw that brought up something on this that I wanted to bring. Oh, I know. Now I know. The idea that – and you covered it too. The idea that there's just too much of AEW that feels like it's sort of a booker playing out all the fantasies from what he grew up watching. And the danger in bringing acts into AEW that have – the vibe of the dying days of Nitro, the WCW Thunder era, and the Jarrett TNA era, when the idea behind AEW, Saraya talked about it, is, wow, this is so cool. Like, look at this company. It's cutting edge. It's forward-leaning. It's Kenny Omega getting his first shot to be on national cable television in the United States, the Young Bucks. Same thing, getting a major push. Cody Rhodes separated from WWE. He can now be everything that he was meant to be. He's proven himself outside of AEW. He's entrepreneurial. He's a visionary. He's this, he's that. And they got Jericho and Moxley too, but this young core of AEW originals, it was more than just four. MJF rising up. And all those people I mentioned are not WWE, quote, cast-offs or TNA, people associated with TNA or the dying days of Nitro. And now you got a show that, you know, you've got the Acclaimed who are, and we'll get into that, but they're fresh and new and relatively young, but they're hanging out there with Billy Gunn and they're making references to WWE and you know, late 90s stuff. You got Christian Cage out there. It's just like there's been, you know, one after another, we could go through the list of people being brought in who are not becoming bigger stars because of the AEW platform, but they're being brought in as if you should know who they are because of what they did elsewhere, and we're going to sort of continue their stories, but not necessarily make them bigger stars than they were. And it gets enough to add layers to my question here before I throw to Eric, but it does kind of come to a recurring question that comes up with me when I watch AEW, which is, which wrestler is a bigger star because of AEW who was at all known before they arrived? And who becomes a bigger star than they were during their first 3 weeks in the company? The list isn't zero, but I don't think that list is long enough. It's not as long as it should be, and part of that is splitting the bandwidth so many ways, but part of it is bringing people in, and it includes people from Japan. It's not just U.S. TV, where there's just a lot of bandwidth being spread in a lot of different ways, and they don't stay focused enough to build up the people who would keep that feeling that Saraya talked about in her promo of this being this forward-leaning, modern, cool company. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, okay to bring in a limited number of former WWE folks, either those who were released or old-timers who Vince didn't have use for anymore. The smart thing to do is to use them to get over your new talent who are going to be around for, in theory, 10 to 15 years and are on the front end of their career or starting in the middle of their career and not on, you know, their last legs trying to get one last paycheck from a guy who's got money. And that's sometimes AEW does that. Sometimes, you know, most of the time they don't, right? Christian Cage will ultimately probably put over Jungle Boy, right, and help elevate him. I think that'll happen. MJF, the list that you talked about, you know, MJF, the Acclaimed, you've got those people. They stop and start with Ricky Starks. Powerhouse Hobbs now is back getting a push because they have they need heels to go against Wardlow. Excuse me. Sorry, I had a cough. I would prefer fewer ex-WWE, ex-TNA talents in there and to hire, or if you sign them, use them to put over your core AEW folks. And that's kind of why, I mean, that's not going to notice in the AEW locker room. And that's why there's been, you know, some tension. I mean, they let it seep out a little bit in promos about, you know, that kind of tension. And was it your reporting on CM Punk when they signed him? They're like, oh, that's great. Maybe he'll make a difference in business. However, we're not paid by the gate or pay-per-view buys, and it's going to set my push back a year or two, right? Mm-hmm, so, and Punk was actually a good addition, or so we thought at the time, because he did prove to be a ratings draw and a pay-per-view seller before imploding and spending his time injured. So, you know, if I would prefer – why people fell in love with AEW to the extent that they did was because of what Soraya said and not because, you know, the Big Show and Mark Henry and Christian Cage and Jeff Jarrett and company are on TV.
Tyler Sage on Twitter says, Jeff Jarrett is in the All Elite Zone. Thanks. I hate it. Oh, there we go. All right, let's pause. Let's introduce the show. Let's you know, bring on some callers and some and get some conversation going here and read some emails. Certainly have feedback in the inbox. So yeah, let's do that. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, which includes our long-running newsletter, our website, pwtorch.com, and lots of podcasts, some free, some ad-free for VIP members, and many that are VIP exclusive, including tonight's Everything with Rich and Wade podcast, which should be posted around the time of this show on our VIP feed. So go VIP, everybody. Support us. Get a lot in return. pwtorch.com/goVIP. And the other voice you hear is Eric Kroll, who is contributing to PW Torch in various ways these days, including some columns and podcast participation. He was a Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist over three decades ago. And after pausing his wrestling viewing, was it Jeff Jarrett who drove you away for 20 years, 15 years?
It was having kids. Really?
No, that was a setup. I didn't want the truth. I wanted you to continue
the bit.
You wanted
me to work?
A little bit.
Well, let me tell you something, brother. It was WWF buying WCW, although that was a sort of a mercy killing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. I mean, yeah, kids and wrestling took a backseat for a while. But the Jeff Jarrett era being pushed as a centerpiece act, when everybody in WCW with guaranteed contracts who was a draw – found a way to, you know, claim they were injured or just didn't want to show up. And Eric Bischoff didn't have control of that, too, and had some contracts with people who were acting somewhat dishonorably with the letter of the law on that. And so we ended up with Vince Russo pushing Jeff Jarrett and Booker T and a handful of others who, you know, were a step down from what WCW had been. And, of course, that is kind of what we're getting at here is does – where does the nostalgia have a benefit and where does the nostalgia feel like you're living in the past or picking the wrong people to celebrate? But anyway, Eric, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Wade. I am proud to say, I don't normally toot my own horn, toot, toot, but I have received a Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot for the first time ever. I have no idea why.
Wow.
But now I've been doing nothing but research for a couple of weeks now, trying to figure out, because I have a lot of, you know, some of the older folks from the 50s, 60s, and even before that, I don't know a ton about. I don't know how draws they were, so I am in research mode. I'm hoping if I get a return visit, it'll make the process a little easier. The knowledge I am gaining that hopefully I can apply for Torch podcasts and columns and content going forward.
The magic of appearing on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, Eric.
Clearly, that's what it was. I can't think of any other reason.
Maybe your tweet. Oh, you don't have your name. People don't even know
that's
you.
No, I don't.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we got a lot more to talk about on this show. We focused on Double J Jeff Jarrett. In fact, let's check in on our Twitter poll, and then we'll get to call. So I'll also give out the phone numbers in a second here. But where did my poll go? Not to it. Profile. I was worried Elon like was going to hold it ransom for money. What's your reaction? Indifferent 45%, strongly disliked 22%, so 67%. Yeah, about the same. Solid addition 17, love it 16. So yeah, no big change. We're up to 174 votes. Comment. He has very strong go away heat with me, says someone named Chris. This promotion was too much ROH, and now it's adding TNA. Sad to see where it's all going, says Corey. And someone else just added a meme, which I'm not going to play, or a little video gif. All right, cool. Our phone number, if you want to participate in the show, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. If you have already called in and are listening, and a lot of you are listening through that method, At any point, now or later, push one if you want to join the conversation. We'd love to hear from some of you wallflowers who just listen in get your thoughts on anything from tonight's Dynamite or anything that we bring up on the show. Another way to participate is email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you are downloading our show and want to know how to listen live, you can find the link and the email and the phone number, all that information at the top and bottom of my TV reports at pwtorch.com. Look for the Keller TV report, and at the top and bottom, at pwtorch.com, that is, and at the top and bottom of those reports, you'll see all that information, including a direct link to the stream. We also, for now, put that up on Twitter at pwtorch, that's at pwtorch, and you can also just go directly to our webpage, wadekellerpostshow.com, and log in and just stream the show or join us. All right, let's get to it. We will begin here with, let's see, who is up first here? We'll go to, it's not refreshing. All right, we're going to begin with Grant in Detroit. Sorry about that. Grant in Detroit, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite?
I see you all didn't really like the whole Jeff Jarrett involvement, but I think might be looking at it. I think you might be looking at it the wrong way. Like, I watched that Ric Flair last match, and yeah. I think they are trying to fill a void with them changing MJF to a babyface and Christian being injured. They trying to find, like, that pure heel that everybody doesn't mind booing. And I think Jeff, like, kind of fills that void because, especially watching that Ric Flair match, like, he definitely embraced the boos and everybody was booing him for sure. I mean, I don't know what you all think.
Eric, I hope you're listening closely to that. I think it was aimed at you.
When you said Flair's last match, I hope you had last match in quotation marks. Because I'm
or with an
sure
asterisk, yeah.
That won't be Ric Flair's last match. Grant, Jeff Jarrett is not for me. I'm not the only one who has opined tonight that he has go-away heat. And the "you still suck" chant from the crowd, I mean, don't see how Jeff Jarrett leads any pay-per-view buys. I don't see how he sells any tickets. He's 55 years old. He is, on the back nine, I will let's say, and he's just not my thing. I think he risks alienating some of the core AEW fan base that's been with him from the start and bought so many pay-per-views. I don't think they're going to not tune in. I don't think they're going to not buy pay-per-views. I just think I don't think it's going to go over very well with them. And I'd like to hear Tony Khan explain what he was thinking. Maybe he could change my mind. I doubt it, but possibly.
Well, what do you think is, what are we learning about Tony Khan's booking philosophy when it comes to who he brings in and his booking pattern? Like, step back. What is Jeff Jarrett part of when it comes to the early, presumably the early book on Tony Khan's philosophy?
Well, I mean, I believe Tony Khan loves Mid-South, loved Ring of Honor, watched some WWF and maybe even WCW in their heyday. He's a decade younger than we are, I think, at least. And that Mid-South is his favorite. Jeff Jarrett, to me, Tony Khan's one of his overarching booking philosophies is big surprises, bring in new people, right? It's been that way since the start of the promotion, and it happens all the time. It's his way of generating buzz, of freshening things up, getting people talking on the internet seems to be a priority for Tony Khan. By the way, it got out on the Brian Alvarez show today that there was going to be something big on Dynamite that was going to have everyone talking. And I assume it was Jeff Jarrett, but it occurs to me that it might also be Colt Cabana challenging Chris Jericho in the Ultimate FU to CM Punk.
I know.
I think it's just, to what Grant said, he's bringing in another heel, and he is. But mostly, it's about a surprise. It's Swerve surprises, big part of the Tony Khan booking DNA, and this one was both.
I dubbed it Sugar Rush booking. I think Tony gets a sugar rush out of somebody new showing up on his show. And it reminds me of very early TNA when it was, you know, Jerry Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett really wanted to have, when people bought the weekly Wednesday night pay-per-views for $10, they wanted there to be as often as possible some sort of surprise wrestler from the Monday Night War era, especially showing up and adding a little star power, a little novelty, buzz on the internet. And Tony Khan, in a similar way, likes that. He likes to have something being added to the mix. He likes to say, we're going to have a big surprise for you. He likes to have that buzz that comes from having new talent. I think he just likes meeting new people and having a new, sort of like a kid playing with an action figure. I think he likes new toys as a booker. It was John Piermarini, the ex-WWE creative team member, who I believe coined the phrase shiny new toy, or at least brought it into popular lexicon in wrestling when he was on my shows back like a dozen years ago talking about Sheamus and during his time there, how, you know, Sheamus was seen as Vince McMahon's shiny new toy. And you do kind of get the sense Tony has that, has when there's an opportunity to bring somebody in that's going to get a crowd pop, or he can turn the lights off and on, or have a reveal or hype a surprise, that I think he thinks it's good business, but I also think he gets something out of it himself too. And I mean, that's why I say, like, I can be warmer to the Jeff Jarrett edition in specific, but in a macro sense, just think it continues to seem like a shortcut to just committing to a certain smaller number of acts and getting the absolute most out of them that you can, and really digging deep into the storylines and the personalities of the people you're pushing, instead of what does feel like a sugar rush or a crutch by, you know, booking surprise appearances so often. And then I do think that's part of what, you know, the early story, the initial story, at least of Tony Khan's booking here over the first few years of his booking, it's, he really likes those surprises and he's not real discriminating.
Yeah. We saw that at the first Double or Nothing event before Dynamite had even started in May of 2019, the big surprise at the end was Jon Moxley coming out. Now that was a great surprise. I popped for that. Loved Jon Moxley, loved him beating up Jericho and Omega. And now three and a half years after that May 2019 pay-per-view, we're getting Jeff Jarrett. So it's the law of diminishing returns on display for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I'll go back to Grant. Any follow-up on that topic or another?
The only other thing I had was, now, do you all feel like the whole Jarrett not liking AEW storyline is too similar to what he's already doing with Jericho not liking ROH?
What do you think, Eric?
I think the Jericho thing is why there's this focus on ROH and why Jericho specifically has the belt. I think that storyline is and Jericho with the belt is almost solely trying to get Warner Brothers Discovery to give him an ROH weekly TV show, even if it's on streaming as part of whatever the combined streaming service is going to be. So I guess it doesn't bother me that way. You know, you Jericho is getting heat by disrespecting the traditions of ROH, and I guess Jarrett is getting heat by ripping on the AEW fan base. So maybe slightly different, but certainly not, you know, certainly maybe in different parts of the same ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, Jarrett did not specifically bring up TNA. He talked about his family, and I think that's smart because Jarrett, I mean, TNA was a chapter in Jarrett's life, but Memphis Wrestling was a chapter, a longer significant chapter in his family's life. And, you know, he was a featured player in WCW and the WWF in the 90s. And the other was, you know, Global Force Wrestling, which, you know, Jason Powell and I had a bit on the flagship a decade ago, just joking about, you know, our GWF or GFW update of the week. I remember interviewing Jeff Jarrett and bringing up that we had a running bit because, you know, Global Force Wrestling was basically a website and nothing else. It was an idea with wrestlers on the roster that, you know, agreed to have their face put on the roster, but they never wrestled for them because they didn't actually put on matches. But it was, you know, a wrestling company in paper and cyberspace only, kind of searching for a home to give it a reason to actually run matches. And I don't know, that was a whole thing. Did you even know that existed, Eric? Like, or
not in real time. It was happening, but I've read up on it since then. It's hard to get a TV deal, right?
Yeah, but it's easy to get a website. So yeah, I mean, Jeff had a lot of chapters. TNA is just one of them, and I don't think Jarrett is big of a chapter of Jarrett's life as TNA was. I don't think he wants that to be the only thing people think about when they see him, even though he's using their music. I think he wants this to be a Jarrett family legacy thing, but we'll see. It's a small sample size with just one promo. So we'll see. Anyway, let's move next to Ryan in Cumberland. Ryan, what did you think of Dynamite tonight? Ryan, are you there? Oh, I thought I heard him and then got disconnected. Oh, well. Okay. I don't want to read this later because it's long, so I want to get to it now. Ken has emailed, and he is frustrated. He goes, "This was easily the most depressing episode of Dynamite that I've seen yet, despite your bizarre recent love of Jeff Jarrett." Okay. It doesn't feel like that long ago that the promotion felt so fresh and exciting, built around an exciting young core of talent, not yet exposed to a national audience, logical long-term booking, a small number of titles that all held high stakes, and a self-espoused respect for their audience. 3 years later, I don't even know what I'm watching anymore. WCW and TNA comparisons may seem lazy, but from a creative standpoint, I feel like I was watching the worst of WCW and TNA tonight. We open with Darby Allin, one of the supposed four major young pillars of AEW, jobbing to a wrestler most known for his run in TNA 18 years ago, impersonating Randy Savage, accompanied by another TNA wrestler from 20 years ago, and a giant who may or may not actually wrestle, who knows. A mystery man in a Sting mask easily cost Darby the win, was dramatically unmasked to be a wrestler nobody knows, but was ultimately a red herring himself, leading to the debut of TNA's least popular wrestler, Jeff Jarrett, to recycle a gimmick Dan Lambert did better. There we go. MJF, Ricky Starks, The Elite, and Dante Martin sat home while Jeff Jarrett screamed slap nuts to end quarter one. AEW's world champion had a throwaway match in Q2, followed by another run-in from Ethan Page. A 52-year-old William Regal cut a promo for Jon Moxley, followed by a birthday party for a 59-year-old Billy Gunn, complete with obscure dirt sheet references, followed the acclaimed being adopted by Billy Gunn, followed by another run-in from a tall guy who got fired from the WWE in 2018. Then we had Ring of Honor, the world title match between the original face of AEW, Chris Jericho, and the Dark Order's Colt Cabana. Only the announcers presented Cabana strictly as an ROH wrestler and made no mention of the fact that he was with the Dark Order for months on AEW television for years. And whatever happened to Adam Page? Can someone tell me? Did he jump to Ring of Honor or AAA or New Japan? Cabana lost due to even more interference from Jake Hager. The Ring of Honor play-by-play guy that no one knows had his glasses broken, leading to a heatless pull apart by some of the best wrestlers in the world. One of Trios champions, belt that is rarely defended, challenged for the All-Atlantic Championship, a belt that is rarely defended, with the winner somehow getting the gift to gift a championship match to their dream opponent next week. Disqualifications are suddenly not a thing in three-way matches, leading to more interference. Shibata, a New Japan wrestler seen exactly once on AEW television, appeared from nowhere and declared himself to be Orange Cassidy's dream opponent. Tony Schiavone is with Rick Ross. Vicky Guerrero and Nyla Rose screamed throughout Jade Cargill's match, and look at that, interfered with the match. Nyla Rose attacked Kiera Hogan, which the cameraman missed after she tried to steal the TBS title, not to be confused with the interim women's world title, not to be confused with the women's world title. We then cut to another Ring of Honor match for the TV title. Is it more important than the RH world title, which was defended earlier? Between another wrestler mostly known for TNA's failed national run, Samoa Joe, and Brian Cage, who used to be in AEW and then disappeared, but is now back with a faction we've never been introduced to. Taz never acknowledges that Brian Cage used to be on his team. Did he forget? Wardlow, the TNT champion, runs out in a suit because he's friends with Samoa Joe. But then Powerhouse Hobbs runs in and attacks Wardlow. Hobbs picks up the title to close the show. Maybe it's the ROH TV title or the TNT title or the New Japan title. Okay, so in conclusion, there's just no discipline. Tony only appears to be booking for the pop. And the end result is that nothing really feels special or logical anymore. Such a far cry from the four pillars, the new fresh talent, the meaningful titles and storylines, and the programming meant to appeal to the 18 to 34-year-old demo looking for an alternative. In a vacuum, a 55-year-old Jeff Jarrett might be okay. But when you've got so many future stars sitting at home and the WWE on the precipice of a historically massive TV deal in 2024 that will allow them to outbid AEW for almost anyone on their roster, it sure feels like we're watching AEW repeat the mistakes of WCW and potentially dig their own grave. Eric, that was a lot, but as I skimmed over it here before reading it, I felt like it is capturing, I think rather succinctly, despite its length, the frustration, bullet point by bullet point, that you can pluck from this show and how this show represented the frustration that AEW fans who really were passionate about this product a year or two and three ago, where they stand now. And I don't think Tony Khan should underestimate, as he puts in the press release, we're hitting on all cylinders, and you know, spins the numbers that he draws as a promoter ought to, but you don't want to believe your own kind of PR, you know, they say. The viewership that AEW has now might be softer than it was before. We saw with Nitro and Raw that Nitro was an inferior show for a while before they actually started losing viewers to Raw. And I think Ken represents a significant part of the AEW audience. I don't read this thinking, he's just outgrown the product, he doesn't get it. I do think this is an email representative and fair-minded and not wishing AEW ill will, but representing a part of their audience.
Was that a Wade Keller email? Did you write that really quickly while I was talking? It sounds like something you'd write. I guess I am not as down on AEW as Ken. I share some of Ken's concerns. I think they do have some folks they're building up for the future, you know, and even in the present, you know, the Acclaimed. Swerve Scott shows a lot of promise as a heel, maybe reaching his full potential in AEW. I think more than anything, though, if you look at what's happened to Tony Khan this year, the guy who had his first four, who had such his plans so well laid out, he had his first four AEW champions on the initial poster, right, for the first pay-per-view, I think it's been noted. He's had to deal with a lot. He's had the locker room rebellion. He's had CM Punk get injured. Then he had CM Punk have a rant at a press conference and have a fight with the Elite in All Elite Wrestling. And that's just, you know, people wanting their WWE release because Paul Levesque is back in charge and Vince is gone. You had immature people like Sammy Guevara getting into guys who struggle with mental illness. Eddie Kingston, right, getting in altercations over seemingly trivial. You called me fat and didn't ask me permission type stuff. You know, there's probably a decent book in behind the scenes chronicling of 2022 in AEW, where nothing has gone according to plan, and we're getting to see what Tony Khan does when he has to scramble to book to fill TV time, and while he's trying to keep ratings as strong as he possibly can so he can get a TV deal from a company that's been cutting, a big, huge media conglomerate that's cutting billions of dollars from its bottom line, just as Tony Khan is going to ask them for, you know, three times as much money, four times as much money, and hope he gets maybe two times as much money as they're now paying him so that he doesn't get outbid for all of his free agents. It's a challenge, and it's not the only thing in Tony Khan's plate. He's got a soccer team, the Premier League, that's doing pretty well this year, probably better than expected. He's got an NFL team that is still sucking like it usually does. And, you know, I mean, at some point doing that for 3.5 years, maybe you're not as focused and sharp as you once were when you started it. And the question I always have, is there anybody who tells Tony Khan no, right? Or Tony, you know, who is the kitchen cabinet that goes to who's not the, you know, the WWE flunkies, yes men, stooges, right, who tell Vince what he wants to hear? Who's the person who says, Tony, you might want to do it this way instead, right? Or are they all just,
this,
you know.
This show?
Yeah, kissing up, kissing up to him? I mean, you know, is Jericho being a locker room leader and kissing up to get a new, you know, a new contract and extension? He's just telling Tony what he wants to hear and everything's great. I don't know. I'm not backstage, but you know, the quality control person who has sort of the overarching big whiteboard where they keep track of all the lore and the storylines and who's beaten who, you know, the stuff that AEW fans tend to care more about than your average fan, the folks Vince McMahon ran off by not paying attention to something that happened a week prior or 2 weeks prior, you know, that counts a little bit more in AEW. And it's the death of a thousand cuts, right? If you keep raising the eyebrows of fans like Ken, who wrote a really long, thoughtful email, and even, you know, myself, right? I was super frustrated with tonight's Dynamite. At some point you think the ship gets righted, and when will that be, right? I don't know.
I'll read one more email, and then I want to talk about the Elite and the little videos they're doing too, and if help is on the way, in other words. But first, Henderson from Charlotte, North Carolina, says, "Hey Wade, I'll be honest. Daniel Bryan was right. I am incredibly fickle. Last year, I was all in on AEW. I couldn't make myself watch Raw. Oh, the difference a year can make. My only loyalty is to whoever can entertain me. Jeff Jarrett is not it. In my opinion, he's not needed in AEW. The sad part is I'm 37 and from the South. I'm the target demo for him. The only thing he makes me think of is the dark days of the WWF, the dark days of WCW, and every day of TNA. AEW has so much talent. They are already fighting for time from the ROH purchase, and now let's throw Jeff Jarrett in the mix? This did not help. I am still rooting for AEW. All my favorite wrestlers are there. I wish they could go back to pre-ROH and get a do-over. For me, that is when things took a bad turn for AEW. Sorry to be a Debbie Downer. Hopefully I'll be able to get back to raving about AEW soon. Thanks for all your great work." Ken's not alone, and I think that's a more pithy but similar sentiment from Henderson. Is the return of Kenny and the Bucks, and I presume the either dead or waiting to come back Hangman Page, because the last we saw of him, he was out on the mat, and they called off a match. Tony Schiavone's looking like, you know, he's, you know, fearful for Hangman's well-being, and they haven't updated his situation, unless you're on Twitter all the time and saw the tweet. And that was, you know, that was later in the week. So go ahead, Eric. Yeah,
I think they did say something toward the end, not the beginning, mind you, of the Rampage that followed the big injury, right?
Okay.
Update right at the start of the show probably would have been more appropriate, and then also repeating that update to the show that is the bigger audience. But go on, Hangman Page.
Yes, exactly. It was a main event that ended prematurely with a scary situation. Rampage this week drew 370-some thousand viewers. Dynamite is drawing, you know, around 1 million, give or take. It does not count. It's not enough. Now, it might be strategic, and they might be willing to take the body blow for not updating the condition of a top star, former world champion, who went down on live TV with a serious injury. They might think they're willing to take the criticism for not actually following up on that on the following episode of Dynamite, because they want Hangman to be bitter over the fact that AEW swept him out of the ring and didn't bring him up. And so maybe that's part of what they're going to be doing with the Bucks and Kenny and Hangman if those four are together. But you got to take some heat in the meantime if it's part of investing in a storyline payoff. But it's not unlike them either to have something happen on Dynamite, not follow up on Dynamite, have something happen on Rampage, and not introduce the more than twice the viewership to what you're referring to. And there's a lot of that. And a part of it is they want you to watch Rampage. They don't want Dynamite to be taken up by catching you up on things that you should have watched on Friday night or over the weekend on DVR. So part of it is I think, just a stubbornness or not wanting to take away the incentive to watch the show. But it comes with a price, and I believe it is worthy of criticism. But is help on the way? And is this kind of feedback, if this is – and we'll see what the numbers – you know, this doesn't feel like a blockbuster Dynamite viewership-wise. I would predict a drop in viewership this week. You know, viewers are fickle. Ratings are
– they're up against the World Series. Yeah.
Yes. And, but, you know, I mean, this is the time of year where Dynamite dropped last year after a stretch of million-plus views too. But nevertheless – you know, are more fans going to peel off because the loyalty is softer than it was before? Do you want a program that holds almost all your viewers, even if there's a World Series game or NHL games or local NBA games on? Yeah, you want to produce the best shows you can to keep as many of those people as you can, because not everybody likes the World Series better than AEW. In fact, a lot of people would rather have a really good AEW show than watching the World Series, especially, you know, in this era with the age group AEW is going after. So, again, I'll repeat the question. Bucks, Kenny, Hangman, is help on the way, Eric? Does that solve a lot of these problems, or do the problems kind of override that or coexist with it and drag down the return of those four?
Well, the question I have when they do return is, are there more core AEW fans who stuck with the promotion and love Kenny and the Bucks and Hangman, or are there more people who loved, you know, who love CM Punk when he came in and are going to blame the Bucks and Kenny and Hangman for him not being there anymore, right? Or, you know, they're either going to be big baby faces or heels. And I don't know which way it's going to go. I mean, my gut says the Bucks and Kenny will be faces because they stood up to CM Punk more so than they'll be viewed as heels by AEW's fans. But I don't know that for sure. And I tell from the Delete the Elite vignettes that have run the last 2 weeks which way they're going to go. Right, I don't know if they're coming back, regardless of what the crowd reaction is. Are they going to come back as faces or heels?
They learned with MJF they might have a plan and it might backfire. I mean, right. Tony Khan might get booed because of what the Bucks and Kenny and perhaps Hangman, the message that they're sending about being erased. The heat might not be on. It might be on the company and not on them if they're trying to be heels. And if they're trying to be baby faces and trying to blame, they're not going to blame Pac because he's breaking up with Phoenix. So that doesn't even make any sense either. So, yeah, I don't know what they're planning, but I hope they've thought it through, and I hope they learned from the MJF thing. You don't want to turn the company heel.
Yeah, it seems, you know, I mean, it's intriguing. I'm interested. I'm waiting with bated breath each week to see do Kenny and the Bucks appear. Are they saving this to try and pop a pay-per-view buy rate on what, outside of Moxley and MJF and the intrigue surrounding will MJF cheat or won't he, will he win the title or won't he, doesn't have a lot else going for it at this point with just two Dynamites left to build it and three Rampages. I potentially, depending on how, you know, it's in the devil's in the details, the devil's in the booking. I think, as I said earlier, the core AEW fans are going to be happy to see these guys back. Are they in more need of heels or faces right now? If you turn MJF face and you actually do that, there's more of a gap on the heel side, right? You'd want Kenny to come back as a heel if that's possible, I would think.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing my AEW roster depth chart update soon, and I will have ready answers to that in terms of how I feel about it. I haven't sat down and just assessed things, but it's tough and we're going to get to Colt Cabana too. The passing mention of that you made about it sticking it to Punk a little bit, or, you know, whether that, you know, was meant as a message. But yeah, I mean, there's just it's hard to do an AEW depth chart during Forbidden Door season because they're just, you know, off doing their own thing. And now, you know, you have, ROH Dynamite basically on Wednesday nights. Or, you know, a big part of Dynamite is the ROH brand. A fan held up a sign saying more AEW, less ROH. I mean, Tony Khan wants ROH to be a brand that he can split off, do a brand split, get another TV deal, earn more revenue, employ more wrestlers, have it be, you know, a feeder systems like NXT, but also a legacy brand that's doing its own thing differently. It allows them to do more pay-per-views and earn more revenue without watering down the AEW pay-per-view schedule. There's some positives, but what he's done or what he's doing is potentially turning the ROH brand heel because it's displacing AEW segments and AEW wrestlers who fans want to see more of. In fact, I'll add another email to this. This is AJ, who said, unfortunately, the overriding theme of AEW and Tony's booking is to heat a wrestler up and just about when they should be pushed to the next level, just completely forget about them. Scorpio Sky, Miro, numerous others, now Ricky Starks. Since the biggest win of his career at Ash at Arthur Ashe Stadium, I think he's been on TV twice. Is he feuding with Hobbs? Not a top five worst Dynamite because of Starks. Product seems dead. At the five-year anniversary of AEW, will we say the high point was Colin Danielson's debut at the close of 2021 All Out? 14 months ago, I would have never deemed the product could get this bad. People frustrated watching the show, listening to us and expressing it. John from Tennessee, I feel like AEW Creative is the worst it's ever been. We have two matches announced for a pay-per-view. That's in 2 weeks. There's been zero build for this show. Putting Jeff Jarrett on TV, it just makes this company feel more like TNA, which always felt way below WWE. And I've never seen a worse reaction to a mystery attacker reveal than the Cole guy received. And I know I'm beating a dead horse, but there are way too many titles. The company really just feels like Tony's playing a wrestling video game. Do you think getting rid of or unifying most of the titles would help this company? What is one immediate change you guys would make? Thanks for all the great content. Everyone go VIP. Eric, I mean, there's a lot there, but he did ask a couple specific questions. Unify the belts, and what's one immediate change?
No, I mean, I guess I would urge patience. Tony Khan only got control of ROH in, what, March or April, and he he announced it, and he was all excited. Never really explained how ROH would fit into AEW. Just sort of happened. And it's taken up more and more of the real estate. And I understand people's frustration and impatience who want their old AEW back. It's hard to get a TV deal. It might have been a little easier for wrestling. It might have been easier for Tony Khan to get a TV deal if there hadn't been this huge merger that sucked up all the oxygen. I mean, it's thing number 558 on Warner Brothers Discovery's list, giving ROH TV, hour of TV on a streaming platform, if that's what it's going to be. I guess we'll find out when he gets that TV deal for ROH. Seems like when, not if, at this point, based on his public comments. If all the ROH stuff goes over to ROH and AEW has more room to breathe, I think fans can be happy. But I get why they're itchy. You know, the promotion spent a month on the Forbidden Door show, which ended up being very positively received and reviewed by fans and did a decent buy rate given what it was. And, there's been problems in AEW this year. And I'm hoping, 2023, if they start ROH on TV every week, we get maybe some plugs for the ROH show, but for the most part, we go back and all of these belts can go over to ROH TV and they can have three matches a week during the hour they get, and they could all be ROH title matches. And the logjam will be broken. If that doesn't happen, I think certain portion of the fan base may throw up their hands. I mean, we're already seeing in the box office for AEW being down by half in a lot of cases, half or more. Yep. Some of that is running the same towns over and over again or multiple times before they visited new territory. I mean, tonight, I think WrestleTix had the show at about 2,500 or so, depending on what the last minute's walk-ups were in Baltimore. And last time there were 4,500, right? So that's a big drop. Next week, they're going to be in Boston for Dynamite. 2,600 so far, according to WrestleTix, almost 5,700 last time. So, could you imagine having gone to the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut last Friday for 3,800 souls who did for 2 hours of a dark taping and then that rampage that they put on with like very little, Moxley was in a squash match, I think, but not a ton of star power. Could you imagine having to sit through that, the 3 hours essentially of all squashes? I mean, that would have been that would have tried anybody's patience. So, I mean, I guess how much is the reduction in fans that due to running the same towns over and over again, how much of it is, hey, we don't know that the Elite and the guys we want to see are going to be, CM Punk, the Bucks, Kenny Omega. We don't think they're going to be on the show, so we're not going to buy tickets, right? How much of that is each? I don't think we know.
And if you're AEW, you should think we're going to build our audience when we return to the town each time, each successive time. When the idea should be that I had such a great time, I'm coming back and I'm bringing a friend. Not, well, I've seen them and now I don't need to go again. I mean, that's not the direction business should resign themselves to going. And but that is the trend line right now. And that's where, you know, when Tony says in the press release, AEW's hitting on all cylinders, it's like, did he need to say that? You know, like, why did he say that? In what way is it? You can say we have some areas of strength, but, you know, that also doesn't belong in a quote in a press release on Mike Tyson. Like, just talk about Mike Tyson, but you want your credibility with the audience that is, you know, reading wrestling websites and following, you know, listening to podcasts like this where we're talking about the press release. You want credibility. You want your words to matter. And it comes across as if his head is in the sand on some things, or he's just, you know, gaslighting or BSing the audience, because it's not, I mean, I just, hitting on all cylinders is an overstatement, however you feel about AEW right now. You know, they're not hitting on all cylinders, or at least the common way I think that phrase is interpreted by people.
Yeah, I mean, for people who are AEW stans and hardcore fans who blanch at any criticism levied at the promotion, they love that quote, right? Because they're going to lap up whatever they serve, and then, you know, the other people just roll their eyes. And well, in my view is he's a wrestling promoter. You said it, you know, wrestling promoters gaslight and BS. It is the nature.
But Tony's brand is a different kind of wrestling promoter, accessible. Friendly, a big fan, not just all about the money, but about serving wrestling, super serving wrestling fans. Jason Powell, actually, and this my comment there just reminded me, he said, overall, this Dynamite, this is over at ProWrestling.net in his Dynamite report. Overall, well, this is a step down from the previous 2 weeks. It wasn't a bad episode. It continues to feel like a show by a super fan for the super fans, which is great for that fan base, but it really feels like that limits the growth of the company. I just think Tony Khan is going after the audience that's excited about this year's Observer Hall of Fame ballot, like you are. And I just don't think, I don't think his booking philosophy is expanding beyond that effectively. You know, people who know who Shibata is, people who know the history of Jeff Jarrett, and well, I know we could argue whether that's really super fan serving. An audience of super fans, if you bring Jared in, that would be disputed. But a lot of what he does seems to be focused on, you know, a real hardcore base of fans, but it's not, you know, I don't sense that Tony is being told or believes that there's a larger audience out there to be had with some tweaks to how he promotes, and as one of our emailers said, more consistency about following through when someone gets hot. Someone seems like they're on the verge of moving up a notch, and then, yeah, they kind of disappear. That goes to what I said earlier about, you know, who really is a bigger star after a year than they were after 3 weeks on AEW television. I just don't think AEW Dynamite creates stars. I think they, you know, it's like the early Nitro years when they just brought a bunch of people in from the 80s territory days and the WWF, and it was just like, look at this new person. But they didn't make Chris Adams special. They didn't make Big Boss Man special. They just rode out whatever equity they had when they brought them in. You can argue the same with Raven even. So anyway, Eric, any more on that before we move on to other stuff?
I think John in Tennessee asked for one fix we would make, and for me it would be to get ROH a television show to clear up the logjam. I don't know if I heard you specifically answer that, but
just figure out who the 8 to 12 male wrestlers are who best represent your brand and repeat them, feature them repeatedly every week, so people know when they tune into Dynamite, like with WWE SmackDown, you're tuning in to see the Bloodline, tuning in to see the Brawling Brutes. You know who's getting pushed right now, who the featured acts are, and you see them in some form every week, and there's advancements in the storylines, and they get paid off. So I just keep saying it. I mean, there's a long list of things we could do to tweak and improve AEW. I think the visual look needs freshening up. I don't think it feels cutting edge. I think it feels a level beneath WWE to a degree that is affecting their business. And I know not everybody's visual. Wherever you're listening to this, if you're in your house, look around. You can probably tell if you're a visual person or not based on your interior design choices. Tony feels like somebody who's not real wrapped up in the visuals. He just kind of launched a set and an opening theme and a logo and the ringside barricades and a ring and went with it. But there's stylistic things that I think could add some sheen to a show that I don't think benefits from its sort of grittiness and retro look. I think it could, and I think it would impress TV executives in his quest for that. But that's not a top five problem for AEW. A top five problem, if not at the very top of the list, is figure out who the top stars are that you really want your brand to be associated with and focus on them and don't be afraid to ride them hard. Repeat, have them wrestle more often on TV. You know, have them cut promos every week on TV, even if it feels repetitive in some way. You know, work hard to make sure you're advancing storylines, but give people confidence, like you said, Eric, when you buy a ticket, who you're going to see in prominent segments. You know, I don't know what Bryan Danielson did off camera today, but he ran out onto the stage and brawled for 20 seconds and left. You know, MJF, you know, people expect when they turn on Dynamite to see MJF. He's in the world title match.
I assume he was selling the effects of the injury of the attack by the firm last week.
Right, but we got a passing mention of him by Moxley in his promo and the announcers, and not strong follow-up otherwise. I mean, if WWE does a major angle, they follow up on it in a major way. They underline, they emphasize, they follow up, they have people talk more about it, and they find a way to advance it with other people talking if that other person isn't present with new content.
Well, wait,
when they're 3 weeks out from a pay-per-view. Go ahead, yeah, sorry.
They did do your favorite thing. They showed a video package of MJF getting, you know, put through the table and whatnot.
Yeah.
So they, I mean, you're sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't there, I guess. It is, you know, 3 weeks before the pay-per-view, as you note, and MJF wasn't on the show, and he's been a staple since his return, cutting long promos and whatnot, interacting with Moxley and Regal. And he wasn't there. But you know, if he's there then he's not selling the effects of the beating, then the beating didn't have much effect. So it's, you know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but it's not a binary choice between what they did and not selling the angle. You know, I think damned if they do, damned if they don't is a false choice in the sense that there's a whole array of other ways that I think they could have more effectively followed up on what they did without him showing up unscathed, no selling what happened, other than a video package that got lost in the weeds between Jeff Jarrett's debut and a good Jon Moxley promo where he talks more about Lee Moriarty and wanting to turn him into a mean, nasty, violent wrestler than he did about MJF being on his mind. But it's a weird, you know, it's a weird angle with MJF and, you know, what will he or won't he – you know, how is he the storyline right now in AEW, the number one storyline, and that is not the vibe anybody would get watching tonight's Dynamite, is where's MJF's head at? You know, where will he be physically? Is this his moment when to beat Jon Moxley and make this his era? Is he going to, you know, Regal mentioned in passing, you know, in a confusing way, even, you know, like what did Regal say about him? He's like, I don't know if he has he has a long way to go to be a true villain. And like, what does that mean when Regal was lecturing him on winning the right way and being the right kind of villain? And now he's introducing the phrase true villain. And it's almost like he's rooting for him, but he's skeptical. It just, I just didn't think it hit the right beats. And it just was, boom, it was over. And then we moved on to a lengthy birthday celebration for Billy Gunn. They followed up on it with a video package, and Moxley and Regal mentioned it. It didn't feel like the number one storyline in the company a few weeks before a pay-per-view, and they were done with it at that point.
You know, I don't know in the you know, there are still many cases of COVID a week. I'm not saying at all that I have any knowledge of that's why MJF wasn't there, but you know, it still sometimes does cause people not to appear, right? My guess would be, and in AEW they keep that stuff pretty buttoned down pretty tightly. If you don't see MJF next week, I'd start to get a little worried whether he's injured or ill in some way. You know, you could have at a minimum, Tony Khan is a big fan of Mid-South. You know, this babyface being grievously injured and having to sit out a few weeks selling the injury, that was important to Bill Watts. Jim Duggan doing an interview from hospital bed. Steve Dr. Death Williams doing an interview while, you know, out injured. You could do something like that, right? MJF out at a poolside wearing a neck brace, whatever, you know, cutting an intense promo about how he's pissed. You know, now the problem is right now he's pissed off at the firm, and that's not who he's main eventing the pay-per-view against in 3 weeks. But you could have done something, to your point, to get him on screen, even if it was in a pre-tape.
Also, by the way, and maybe, you know, some people say, no, this is not something you want to hammer home, but like the Jeff Jarrett thing, once it happened, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I would want to criticize him for it, but it's like that's a well-known star who was just on WWE TV, prominent part of multiple decades of pro wrestling, going back to the 80s. He's in a major angle on your show, and it was like once it happened, it was sort of over. I don't think there was even a passing mention by the announcers or any kind of follow-up. You know, I would have wanted, you know, Alex Marvez or somebody backstage trying to chase down, you know, Jarrett for a comment or give an update on Darby. And it's a show, and I don't like shows where it feels like you could cut the segments up in a video editor and hit random shuffle and then play the 2 hours of the show, and it would make just as much sense. Like, I just, again, it comes to kind of going back, emphasizing and reminding people what you want them thinking about when the show is over. And when the show was over, it was, you know, three title matches, none of which are major titles, an All Atlantic and 2 ROH titles, to close out the show. And, you know, Gates of Agony running out and Prince Nana and his faction who have, as the emailer pointed out, hasn't even been introduced to the audience. Samoa Joe didn't cut a promo. There wasn't, you know, much of a backstory to this match that TNA took, that Tony Khan and company took the time to emphasize. Same thing with Jade Cargill and Marina Shafir. Just, it's a title match, but there was no context given to it. You know, you just have to have watched Rampage or social media or have a good instant recall of everything that happened. And it just felt like too much was wedged in, and a lot of it just lost its potential meaning because of it.
I mean, I think to me, there's a happy medium, what you describe, which is like the WWE, we believe our fans are children or drooling morons, and we have to stress to them what was important 6 times in the show, which causes someone of even average intelligence to want to fast forward or tear their hair out, and the sort of no selling and not driving home at all what the important stuff was supposed to be by referring to it again, even in a brief way. I don't know what the happy medium there is. I don't want AEW to turn into WWF and half the show is replay video packages. I also do think they could benefit from a little more explanation and not relying. You know, I mean, Jade Cargill and Marina Shafir, they sort of, AEW seems to rely more on the announcers filling in those gaps a lot of the time. Like Cargill and Nyla have been feuding because Nyla stole the belt, and I guess they kind of made that apparent when she was standing up on the stage annoyingly doing commentary and then having Vicky be even more annoying. And that wasn't much of a match if Marina's supposed to be a gatekeeper or you know, Marina did not beat up Jade Cargill and they didn't do a 2-on-1 attack to leave her laying, although that would have been like every other – that maybe was the one match where they didn't do that tonight, post-match beatdowns. But, I personally was glad that they didn't remind me that Jeff Jarrett wasn't in the opening segment because then it would have gotten enraged again.
I will take issue with your characterization of WWE recap segments. I think there was a very biased framing in the form of just stating the facts, because I don't think that you have to be what did you say? A challenged child to not grow frustrated?
No,
with...
it's you do that. You have to. You can hammer it home. Maybe remind people once. WWE tends to do it over and over and over again to where half of the pay-per-view shows and the decent chunk of the weekly television is just telling you what just happened, as if you didn't just watch it with your own eyes.
I think you are greatly overstating how much of a WWE typical program is a recap. I think what they do is they do a major angle, they go to a break, they come back, and then they digest what happened, like a halftime show, but it's brief. And the announcers, they show highlights, they emphasize the points, and they add to it with the announcers commenting on it and framing what happened and emphasizing what happened, because it sends the message to adults who have a lot going on in their lives and a lot's about to happen elsewhere on the show. And it says to them, this is important, and here's what these announcers think about it. And then there's often a follow-up interview that adds more to it. It isn't just, here's what happened, and now let's just take a chunk of it and replay it, and then later replay it again. Like, that's not what I watch when I watch every minute of WWE TV every week, 5 hours a week. Your framing of it is just, it's so much more well thought out and sophisticated in their intent, and much less of, I think, your exaggerated framing of it in reality. Are there times they overdo it? Of course, yeah, and there's probably times they underdo it on things. But philosophically, I think it's human nature to, when something big happens, reflect on it briefly before you move on to the next thing and not just move on to the next thing. And AEW has a tendency to move on to the next thing and to a fault the other way, often not even provide context in the first place on things. But it isn't a linear line. I mean, there's different ways you can do it. But just airing a replay and telling you how to think, I don't think is what WWE does.
I feel like you've been making this criticism about AEW for 3+ years now that Dynamite's been on the air. And sometimes it gets better for very brief periods, and then it goes away again. I don't think they know how to do it.
I don't think they watch how
WWE. It really, right? All you would have to do is have someone who knows about putting together a wrestling television show, if you wanted to do this, and I don't want AEW to do this to the extent you do. You have somebody look at how they format it, how they do it, and then you hire the people, or if you don't have the people in-house, you hire people to do it, and that's their job, and then you improve if you think that's something you need to improve. The fact that they haven't done it tells me that they just don't think that's the way to put on a wrestling show. And so you get the sort of careening roller coaster pack, an angle and a beatdown and a match in every segment and a promo. And then it's 2 hours and you're like, oh my God, where do those 2 hours go? Right. That is the house style at this point. And I guess they seem to have a different philosophy than you and/or WWE on this approach to wrestling television.
Well, I don't disagree with your framing of it, but your framing of what WWE does isn't reality. It's not what they do. I mean, it's just like you framed it in such an unfair way where not a single reasonable person, even a child, would think that's a good idea, and WWE wouldn't either, but what you say is not what they do. That's my contention. It's a false choice because you're not honestly presenting what WWE does, and you're misrepresenting my belief of what AEW should be doing based on framing what WWE does in an absurd way. And by the way, a lot of people only watch pay-per-views on Peacock, and those video packages are their way to catch up, and their friends are hanging out with them, and they're watching them. I mean, I think it's smart that WWE does recaps to set up each of their matches. I think that's
just too much. I would be – they do five-minute recaps when a minute 90 seconds would do.
Oh, that's a minute 90 seconds?
A minute or 90 seconds would do.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I was like, that's a weird way to frame it. No, there's no question. Some of the video packages are excessively long, but the idea of doing a recap before each of the matches to, you know, either introduce people or catch people up or remind people and emphasize certain beats of the storyline is something that I just think is like, duh. Of course you do that before you introduce a big match. It's the brief pregame before an NBA game. Hey, here's the history of these teams. Here's what's at stake. Here's the standings. Here's a player who's in. Like you recap what happened the last time those teams played, or what's going on with both teams and their records before tip off or before the puck drops. I mean, that's what you do in sports. You don't just, you know, the game starts and you go, you know, boom, there's a jump ball and the announcers just during the game try to catch you up on the context of what's happening. That's just short attention span. Pandering to people who can't just settle down and relax and watch something and need something fresh entering their eyeballs every second that is live and has never happened before.
Perhaps Tony Khan is putting on the show he himself enjoys? Question mark?
maybe. All right. Let's go to, we'll get some more emails. I want to get to Ryan later, but I want to get to Javier here. So, PW Torch contributor Javier Machado on the Dynamite Post Show. Javier, we have talked a lot about the show. There's still stuff we haven't talked about. Welcome, and lead us through your thoughts.
Psst, Javier, it's Eric. Please bring up Shibata, please, so we can talk about that. Because
yes. There's like 10 things we haven't brought up yet, and we're sitting here rambling on about video packages again.
Yeah. Well,
and you brought it up, Eric.
I was actually just – And I do want to kind of fit something in there. I agree with Eric to a point because not recently, but there was a time about a year, 2 years ago where WWE was just airing the same replay like six times in one show. And it stood out to me because I hated that when WCW did it, that it wasn't really adding anything to it. And there was a while where they were like, it was basically, and for example, I give myself like an hour leeway so I can fast forward all that stuff. And, I find myself, now, before I would catch up. So before it was like only like an hour worth of stuff on WWE program that was worth watching. Now there's more of it. And I think they've hit a much better balance now. AEW has been doing some of that now, which I've appreciated it. As a matter of fact, I think, when they recap the MJF thing, I'd like that. And, but I'd also like to have seen, like, for example, what had happened with, and by the way, I did not follow this closely. I was actually chauffeuring people around while the show was on. I was mainly hearing it while someone else was watching it. I would like to know like what happened with Daddy Ass, talking about the attack. Apparently that was a big thing. We didn't really get, at least I didn't see anything that really, caught us up on that. Would like to have seen that. I do think that WWE something has gone overboard, but lately they've been hitting it well. I realized I have a Pavlovian response whenever I hear those first few, notes of Shibata's song. And I was in the middle of something. I heard da 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 da, and I immediately jumped out of my seat. And I'm like, oh my god! And I started like hyperventilating. I'm super excited for, because dream match. Yeah, sign me up.
I don't see how the match actually takes place. I mean, he is. Either New Japan hasn't cleared him from his for those who might not know the backstory, six, seven, 8 years ago, he got a brain injury with an unprotected headbutt in a match against Okada. Is that right, Javier? Am I telling the backstory correctly?
Yeah. Yes. He collapsed backstage after the match.
Yeah, and so he has made a couple of appearances in New Japan's. He's the New Japan LA Dojo trainer, and he seems to be really, really good at his job based on what they've been turning out in recent years. And the last time we saw him at Forbidden Door, right? He came out and made the save for Orange, I think, against Ospreay, right? And then in January of 2022 at Wrestle Kingdom, he had this, it was supposed to be an exhibition against one of his protege trainees, Ren Narita, and he took the mic before the match and basically said, no, we're going to do a match, and then really haven't seen him too much since then. And so if you were, it seems like promotional malpractice by New Japan to allow his first actual match, if you don't count the sort of exhibition. They really didn't, they really didn't go close to his head, is my recollection, at Wrestle Kingdom in his match against Ren Narita. Why would you have this guy's return to the ring be on a random Friday night rampage where not many seats have been sold in Atlantic City on a Friday night in a one-hour show where they haven't laid any of the groundwork in AEW of why this would be such a huge, important deal? I mean, it's fan service for sure, but my guess is they can't actually have the match because, Pac has to come down and attack them or something, and it has to be an angle. I just... Thoughts, Javier and/or Wade on this? I mean,
the injury was back in 2017, just over 5 years ago. And Dave Meltzer reported at the time that his surgery after he collapsed backstage for a subdural hematoma included, and this is Dave Meltzer's wording, they had to remove his brain and put it back in. He came back later that year and said, I'm still alive, but that was about it. It's weird. So Javier, what happens Friday?
I hope he's had actually two matches. One was basically just a grappling match. I think was it with Zack Sabre Jr. I think. Yeah. So he had that, which was, you know, and then the next one was the one that you mentioned where he did not take any hits to the head. He was protected in that respect. I think you could do the same sort of thing with Orange Cassidy, because Orange Cassidy, you know, is, you know, not going to be doing headbutts or any of that kind of stuff. And likely you'll get some of the comedy stuff.
I'll be slow-mo.
Exactly. You have all the slow motion stuff. You know, so I'm everything you say, Eric, makes logical sense that something's going to happen at some point, but I just want to see him do like one or two things at least. I mean,
are you going to have him job to Orange Cassidy?
It's not just the ability to. It's not just the ability to have a match. It's against Orange Cassidy on Rampage. I know Mike Tyson's calling it. We'll talk about that too. Like I said, we got a lot more to cover here. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So he's covering that one specifically, or he's covering the whole Mike Tyson.
They said the whole hour, but you know.
Yeah, he's gonna make a commentary the whole hour.
So that's gonna be fun. There's something going to go on. I hope they do get something, so we get a little bit something out of Shibata, because then, you know, if there isn't if there is like an attack or something, I could see them maybe pushing this off to like another show, and then have the actual match happen at some New Japan show. That would kind of make sense. That way you start building it, you know, because I agree that it's like, why would New Japan let him actually do that, unless they're going to be tight, you know, strengthening ties between the actual U.S. branch, the strong side of the equation, with AEW. That would be the only thing we think of, that they're going to consider Shibata being part of New Japan of America as opposed to New Japan proper. So that's the only other thing that I could possibly think of, that's a deal between those two entities as opposed to the mothership.
While we were talking, opened up Twitter for the first time since the show started, and Tony Khan, blue checkmark Tony Khan on Twitter, has posted the Jeff Jarrett is All Elite tweet, and it says, Welcome to AEW Dynamite, to the new AEW Director of Business Development, Real Jeff Jarrett. I look forward to expanding the AEW live events calendar in 2023 and future years with Jeff Jarrett, Raphael Morphy, who's, I think, their current events guy, and Chris Harrington, and our entire great AEW team. Jeff Jarrett is All Elite. So,
similar role that he had in WWE.
Yeah, for what, yeah. a cup of coffee? If you blink, you missed it. But, I mean, I don't know how much of that was due to Vince McMahon.
From what I heard, Jeff was more of a Kevin Dunn guy than a Paul Levesque guy. And, so the changeover with Vince just kind of, you know, just, you know, Triple H putting his guys in.
But it's, you know, it's so funny how Jeff Jarrett is on TV doing an anti-AEW gimmick. The sort of Dan Lambert role, and Tony Khan, you know, in kayfabe, and then on social media, Tony Khan's immediately undercutting it by saying, "Don't worry, folks, we've actually hired him," right? Which just pisses me off even more. I mean, I don't know. I think AEW's backstage infrastructure probably is, he's not spending as much money as WWE, not, you know, anywhere close, right? You can see it in the production and in the attention to detail and that kind of thing, but. Jeff Jarrett, is there really nobody who can do these jobs other than the same, you know, recycled retreads that like Jeff Jarrett?
By the way, did I say Jeff was a Kevin Dunn guy or a Bruce Pritchard guy?
You said Kevin Dunn.
I meant Bruce Pritchard. He was a Bruce Pritchard guy, you know, from their time in TNA together and stuff. And so, you know, Bruce Pritchard is not a Paul Levesque guy. It doesn't mean he's not, you know, tolerant of him. But anyway, I just wanted to replay that in my head, and I said, I think I said the wrong name. So wanted to correct that. All right, Javier.
On the Jeff Jarrett thing, I do give Jeff Jarrett as a person the thumbs up. I do agree with you, Wade, that they do have a lot of balls in the air that they're juggling at once. And, you know, Jeff Jarrett and what he, you know, seems to be a big like storyline thing when you have so many. And so I don't think it's I would have probably waited until you have like the Elite in and have things settled down before you really went in a direction like this. As far as Double J is concerned, I've actually been, I don't like, you know, words have meanings and fan is a strong term, but I've always liked Jeff Jarrett. My thing with him was always that he felt like he was pushed one stage higher than he should have been. He was like the number two guy, you know, like, you know, on the second level when he should have been on the third. He was, you know, mm-hmm. on the top level when he should have been in the second. He was the top guy when he should have just been in the mix. And it's always happened when there was someone better, you know, in the wings. Like when he was in, you know, in TNA, when he was the top guy, AJ, you know, it was suffocating AJ Styles, which you know, at that point that I'm, you know, thinking of, you know, he should, you know, AJ Styles should have been the top guy at that point. That's, I think, why there's a lot of resentment to him is like, you know, because he's not a bad performer, but it always seemed to be like one step beyond and keeping other people down. So hopefully that does not, I don't think that would happen here.
Well,
in particular.
Yeah. Well, the good news is this angle probably will disappear from Dynamite in about 2 weeks. 2 weeks later, it'll be on Rampage for two straight weeks. And then there'll be a big climax to the angle on Dynamite after Jeff hasn't been on Dynamite for 5 weeks. There'll be no video package, ding, 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 Eric, to catch people up on what's been happening in front of fewer than half the viewers that Dynamite has on Friday nights. And then that'll be the end of it, and we won't see Jeff again.
Yeah, I mean, cause, that emailer really resonated with that email, the one that said that talked about Stark. You know, he gets his win against Hobbs. It's time to push him, and he's disappeared. He's completely vanished. You know, same thing happened with Miro, and it just happens with everybody. And the thing is that it makes it harder for a fan to really invest in anybody that you're, you know, going to start pushing, because then all of a sudden they end up vanishing. I mean, they were doing the same thing with, oh man, I forgot his name. You can never pronounce his name, Wade.
Of who?
It's Oma? No. He went back to, I think it was in DDT, and he went back.
Takeshita.
Yeah, Takeshita.
Oh yeah. or as Todd Martin wants it to be called. Yeah.
He got a lot of, you know, he was being pushed hardcore, and then I know he went back, but you know, why would you do that if you're not gonna really do anything with him? One thing you said, Wade, was that Tony Khan's bookie philosophy is, you know, that he likes surprises. I will expand that and say that he basically just books to think whatever he thinks will be cool. And, you know, that'll be cool. That matchup will be cool. So let me just book that. I mean, and I want that for the pay-per-view. Sure, we only have 1 week to build it, but that doesn't matter. I just want to see that match. I think, you know, storylines seem to be, like, sped up. And then, like, when a storyline gets derailed because of injury or whatever – he basically just hits pause on it and then picks up right where it left off, as if no time had, you know, gone on. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that when the Elite come back, beat Death Triangle for the trios, and then he brings in, then we'll see Cole come back, and then, you know, Cole, he'll you know, at that point he'll sign Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly in order to, you know, have that match, because I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to go back to that match.
Javier, what else haven't we brought up that you want to talk about?
They're still teasing us with whether Paige or not can wrestle.
Oh, you mean Saraya, not Hangman Page or Brian Cage?
Saraya.
I wasn't sure what you said. Page or Cage? Christian Cage?
Yes.
Can Cage wrestle? Page wrestle?
Yeah.
Gotcha, yeah. No, I yeah. genuinely thought you meant Hangman Page at first. Then I'm like, oh, maybe he said Cage.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, wait, he meant Saraya.
Yes, I meant Saraya, yes.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
bad.
And so She said she was going to talk about it this week. She's going to talk about it this week, but she needs to talk to one more doctor. And I was like, is that a play on Britt Baker? And
yes.
Why would she talk to Britt Baker off camera before telling her fans she's cleared to wrestle? I didn't get that.
She's going to do it on camera and challenge her to a match. She's been cleared.
Yeah, I think whether she's cleared or not, I think it is that she's going to attack her. She's going to show her that she's cleared by attacking her, is, I think, what she was implying.
That was a nothing burger of a promo, though. I mean,
yeah.
Skippable.
Yeah, there's a I don't know. I'm not quite sure how to frame Saraya's approach so far, but there's a little bit of a vibe of, I'm here, I'm a big deal, please recognize that. I think you got to earn it constantly. You got to earn your TV time. You got to seem like you are trying to win over viewers, not live off of, the acclaim that you brought with you that you achieved years ago. And I'm not sensing that from her yet. But, I say it kind of hesitantly because, I mean, it's a small sample size and she's new in town and AW doesn't always give their talent a lot of direction, and that can sometimes lead to, really good, compelling promos, but also kind of slow starts too.
Yep, she did the one disastrous live promo, and then they've been doing pre-tapes with her ever since, which is good because recognize strengths and weaknesses and try and salvage your investment. But I would have thought her first match back would have way more heat, assuming that's where they end up, would have way more heat than it seems like it's on track to have, right? It seemed like it would be a big deal to a certain segment of the fan base, and it just seems cold at this point.
Yeah. Javier?
And speaking of moments that had me sit up and listen, hearing Boom Boom when they announced the it kind of told you that was definitely felt like a message. Eric, you mentioned you don't know whether the Young Bucks and the Elite are going to be booed or seen as baby faces. I do think that with the fact that a lot of the fans were chanting "Welcome back to Cabana" and they welcome that back openly, because since most of this was I wouldn't say his fault, but like revolving around him, I think that the Elite probably would end up getting cheered over. They're not going to be blamed for Punk leaving.
I don't know. This was 2,500 people in Baltimore. Well, I don't know how, what does that look like at a pay-per-view, if that's where they view them. Fans like pop for news. They pop for returns. I would think, as Wade pointed out, they popped for big for MJF's return at All Out right after CM Punk had won the title in his hometown. Pulling all the heat and focus off of that, which actually was fortunate for them given what happened afterward at the press conference and in the locker room. I guess we'll see. Jericho and Colt Cabana, it looked like a couple of old guys who looked winded. It was kind of an average match, but that wasn't the point. The point was the pettiness of Tony Khan on display there, or the goodwill, if you're going to frame it up in a more positive way, the goodwill gesture for Colt Cabana, right? Giving him his turn of the spotlight after his name's been in everybody's mouth for 6 weeks or whatever.
It makes sense, but it was a little too cute to say an ROH champion and have that mean the world singles men's title, and then that Jericho kind of throw out there, it can be any title, men's, women's, whatever. And that was sort of a tip-off to, okay, it's not going to be one of the, six possible names people spent a week, going through the list of champions and trying to figure out who it could be. And it's like, ha-ha, you didn't read the fine print. We have a different set of criteria here, and it's going to be a guy who never held the title that he's apparently a former champion of, based on the implication of what they implied in the hype for this match. But I mean, yes, here's the thing. If CM Punk was out injured and gave up the title and wasn't on TV and was going to miss 6 to 9 months, but didn't have the meltdown, the wild eyed meltdown at the media Q&A, I still think they might've done this. They're doing an ROH storyline. Colt absolutely is identified with ROH, not exclusively. And in the AW universe, he's more identified with their viewers as a Dark Order guy, even though he was sort of the guy standing in the background towering over everybody, never really, rarely doing anything. I could have seen them doing this because Punk's gone for 9 months and we're doing an ROH story. So I don't think – I would put my money on this being what you said, Eric, you know, to some degree. Hey, let's let everybody know where we stand with Punk, and we're going to bring his mortal enemy back and put him on Dynamite. But I also wouldn't have been shocked if they did this anyway. I mean, I think there's room for that possibility too, because they were the whole thing with Colt and Punk was something Punk made a really big deal about in his own head, but nobody else was really thinking all that much about it. I shouldn't speak for Colt. Maybe he was upset about being moved to ROH roster. But, I mean, if he was still getting paid and the idea was, you know, you're going to be more featured there than you are in Dark Order, I doubt he was thrilled with, you know, enamored with how he's being featured in Dark Order either. So ROH might have been a promotion in that way, a bigger fish in a smaller pond.
But all of that stuff did happen after All Out, and so, you know, you're the quote, smart fans who are all on social media and reading the blogs and listening to the podcast and reading the wrestling newsletters are all, you know, for them it was just the match was subtext in all caps.
Yes, and,
right?
And Tony would have to be cognizant of that, yeah. Of that, even if he would have done this anyway. If he, of course that subtext is there, and he has to know that's how it's going to be interpreted. And he didn't change his mind. Let's say he was going to do it anyway. And it was all, you know, he's just, oh, yeah, I'm going to have Colt be one of these guys, and it had nothing to do with Punk. He didn't change his mind knowing that this would be the reaction. And he had to know the reaction would be, ah, that was to stick it to Punk. Go ahead.
I wonder when they came up with the plan to put the ROH title on Jericho and have him do this run like this. Was this was this post All Out as they were, like, shuffling the deck chairs and, you know, everyone had to pitch their new ideas and that was that. I don't know if Jericho came up with this or if Tony Khan came up with this, but, you know, they may not have known at the time. But, yeah, I agree. Colt Cabana fit the bill as a former ROH tag team champion, right? Is that what he was?
TV?
Maybe.
Yeah.
TV champion? Okay, that could be.
Yeah.
Well, I think they said specifically tag team champion because I thought it might have been TV champion. But I think they would have said that because on the air they just said tag team.
Hey, anyway, go ahead, Javier. What else? Oh, you know what? Let's update our poll on Jeff Jarrett. I don't want to forget to do this. 241 votes in, and it is steady. 45% indifferent, 23% strongly dislike. So we're at 68% thumbs down. Assuming indifferent is thumbs down, you can argue that. But 16%. Solid edition, 15% love it, so 32%, roughly speaking, thumbs up. Go ahead, Javier. What else?
Do you think that Colt Cabana's reaction bodes well to for the Elite and how they're going to be received?
Oh, I think the Elite are going to be cheered. I just don't know if they're going to try to portray them as heels and, you know, bitter heels because Tony wiped. If they do that, I think Tony's in trouble, and AEW and Tony Khan are going to be the heels, and fans are going to boo them again. I don't think the Bucks coming. I can't imagine how the Bucks come back and aren't cheered. I mean, speaking of Twitter polls, and it's not necessarily representative precisely, but I think roughly it is. We asked, you know, whose side are you on, the Bucks and Kenny or Punk, and it was a wide margin of victory for Buck, the Bucks and Kenny over Punk, which if Punk saw that poll, had to be crestfallen over that because, I mean, I think he sees himself as the biggest thing AEW ever had and ever got and would not expect that amongst, you know, people who are following a brand like PW Torch on Twitter. But they're overwhelmingly positive towards the Bucks and Kenny. I think people are sympathetic towards them because they were off camera and not having a wild-eyed meltdown, throwing their boss insubordinately under the bus and ripping on people over some weird thing that was going on in his head that nobody else was thinking about for months. So, yeah, people are going to cheer the Bucks and Kenny and Hangman if he's part of the group too. But what are the vignettes? What's the story they're laying the foundation of that they're being wiped away by AEW? Their matches are being deleted. Their images are being wiped out and replaced. It seems to me, and I'm open to your ideas. I'm very open to hearing your ideas, what it might be, that they're going to come back and be upset that they just were suspended and not mentioned for months.
Doesn't it require Tony Khan to acknowledge on TV that they were suspended for months? Something he has
no. It requires you to watch, Eric, it requires you to watch Dynamite and Rampage and Dark Elevation and stay on social media constantly and listen to podcasts. And then you're up on all the angles that AEW takes with their storylines. And I'm not even kidding. I mean, I think Tony Khan, this storyline might be built around entirely around something that people who aren't on social media, which is a majority of people are not on wrestling Twitter, who watch Dynamite by wide margin. But this storyline might be built around something that has never been officially addressed on Dynamite. Now, I think the scope of people who through YouTube videos and podcasts and newsletters even and websites and social media are aware of what happened, but the assumption of knowledge and the using that as the crux, the impetus, the major core of a major storyline with arguably four of your top eight stars is going to be based on something that's never been addressed on Dynamite. I mean, it just feels crazy to me.
I mean, they have to come up with some explanation since they have yet to say. I mean, if you were watching All Elite Wrestling and you were just the most casual of casual fans, you would have noticed that the Bucks and Kenny Omega have been gone, especially after, you know, there was much ballyhoo over Kenny Omega's return. I would think you probably at least know how to go type google.com and you type in what happened to Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks in AEW, and you would get your answer, right? I mean, but they still have to explain it on TV because they've yet to acknowledge they're even gone until these last, you know, until the...
I don't tune into House of Dragons on HBO expecting to have to hit the pause button and then Google a bunch of characters to find out the backstory of something that is not tied into the last time I watched the show. That's just ludicrous.
I am told that you have to do that with shows like that have so many characters with similar names.
yeah, that was a bad example, Wade. I've actually had to do that. So.
Yeah.
That was a bad example.
I'm not saying no. Touche, because I do it too. But if you have a major storyline going on October 10th, and then you watch the October 17th episode. And nothing is mentioned. And then you watch the October 24th episode, nothing's mentioned. And then you watch the October 31st episode, and it seems like you've missed a bunch of stuff, and the only way to know is to look it up on the internet. Like, that's not what they're doing. I mean, if you just re-watch the shows and take notes, everything is self-contained. Does it help to read someone else summarize the show to help make sense of it? Yes. To get the character straight? Yes. But, yeah, not the best example, but you get the point I'm making.
Yeah, I haven't given a lot of thought about what they're going to do to bring him back yet, but I your interpretation makes sense, right? I guess another interpretation is that, you know, what did they ask a question last week's thingy? You know, what if there was no Elite? That seems to be the theme of it. Is it designed to build sympathy for them? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that makes does not make as good a sense as what you said, Wade.
Do we trust them to tell a coherent story as far as this goes either? I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, you know, I don't know how much of this is the Bucks and Kenny sitting down to come up with something and Tony just signing off on it, or it's Tony's idea and they're just going along with it. But this is a situation because it's backstage. It's not an on-air story. It's not something Tony, you know, storyboarded. It has a chance to be an utter mess, a disaster, if they try to translate this into a TV angle. I mean, I have said, I think the Bucks and Kenny should come back, and there should be no reference, no nothing. And I know it'll drive some people nuts, but they should come back, and there's just no way to fix, to catch up on everything. So just have Excalibur say, the Bucks are back after taking a hiatus, and what do they have in mind? What are their goals? Who is their top rival? Find out tonight. Like, just drop them into the show and have them be wrestling characters, wrestlers in the show, and trying to build a storyline off of the Punk thing. Some people would see it as this big missed opportunity. I just see it as a disaster waiting to happen, a convoluted disaster waiting to happen. I hope they prove me wrong if that's the direction they go. Obviously, I want it to be a good program or a good storyline, but I'm skeptical that taking that and turning it into the driving force of these major stars coming back on your TV show is the best of all options when you include all the ones that are not based on reality. I don't think you should include reality on a wrestling show unless it's the best of all options, including the ones that aren't based on reality. I fear this won't be.
Well, you can't – I mean, they probably can't reference Punk because they're still allegedly negotiating a buyout with him, right, if they haven't finalized that already.
They can reference, well, we were gone and we don't know why we didn't do anything wrong. I mean, you can talk and –
Yeah, like the worst – what's the worst version of this? That the Bucks come back and do their passive-aggressive shtick and make insider comments that go over everybody's head, and Kenny Omega is just weird about the whole thing? I mean,
But they expect the crowd to react to it.
That's pretty much what I'm expecting.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
That's pretty much what I'm kind of.
A footnote in all this.
Because of your delay, Javier, I'm going to throw by name to each of you so we don't talk over each other, because it's nobody's fault. It's just there's a little delay with Javier. So Eric, go ahead with your footnote.
Because
I like you better.
Do you know who Colt Cabana was tag team champions at ROH with?
No, I should.
Take one guess as to who his tag team, Second City Saints tag team partner was.
Ace Steel.
Phil Brooks, CM Punk.
Oh, God, okay. Ace Steel would have been good, too. But...
That adds a layer of a second F. To channel my best Rich fan, that adds a layer of hate on top of the hate, the petty on top of the petty, right?
They should have aired a clip of Colt, like, scoring the pinfall and celebrating with Punk.
Yeah.
Anyway, Javier, now I'm open to throwing to you because I like you better. Save the best for last.
Thank you. There we go. I totally forgot what the point I was going to make was because after that came to my mind.
Of course you did.
The fact that it was this guy. Do you think that they're going to be feuding with going back for the Trios title, or because the thing is that the Trios title thing now is a mess because you have your Trios champions basically feuding, which also happens to be what your number one contenders for the AEW championship are also feuding. Look like they're breaking up. So what's going on there? Because I don't know. If that's going to be the match, and then things are going to fall apart between Death Triangle against the Elite, or because that seems to be like a lot to put to if the Elite's coming back to wrestle them.
Yeah. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I think. I mean, that was my gut on where they're headed with this. They're splitting those guys up. I mean, they're doing two tag team. One person in the tag team is turning heel, and the other guy, the other two, and I guess in the case of Keith Lee, the other one guy is, like, sitting there dumbfounded. And so it's the same, a version of the same angle. I'm excited for you want to talk about the six-man thing. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a convenient excuse for why whoever does the job on the Death Triangle side does the job, right? Pac and Phoenix are each playing tug of war with the hammer, and then one of them lets go, and the one who lets go, falls and gets pinned, right? Or that one of them hits the other one in the head, knocking them out, and that allows the Elite to score the pinfall. Maybe in theory, my gut is like that seems overbooked because you want the focus to be on the Elite coming back and getting sort of a dominant win if you want to put them over. But, who knows? It's all going to play out. We don't even know that that's actually the direction. It just seems the likely direction since they had to surrender those six-man titles they won.
Yeah. Javier, what else?
Was the Jade Cargill Shafir thing as aggravating as apparently Sage found it, because I thought it was pretty bad.
Just because Nyla did commentary during the match?
Yeah, the whole commentary.
Or other.
Thing,
what do you like? What do you?
Just like the entire presentation. It just I'm never a fan when there's like a match going on and the story of what's going on is not the match. These are two wrestlers putting their body on the line for each other, and then the story is like not even being filmed. So,
I'm not a fan of either.
I do not like that. Yeah,
I'm not a fan of Marina Shafir getting a title match with like what happened on Dynamite that justifies her getting a title shot. Did she win an eliminator match, whatever an eliminator match means? Did she win a special tournament? Maybe I forgot something, but there was no context given to this match. It's just, hey, title match on Dynamite, instead of just subtracting two of them and making the matter and focusing on it and building anticipation for it. Go ahead, Eric.
I don't know if they explained it, because I was trying. I couldn't hear anything above Vicky's horrible cackle. But I believe the answer to your question is Marina won a bunch of matches on Dark and Dark Elevation, and therefore she was right. But I don't know that they even explaining that at least gives you a fig leaf, even if you don't accept that as an answer.
Well,
I'm not even sure they made that fig leaf of an effort.
Hey, right now the NHL and NBA standings are not based on quality of opposition. They're based on your win-loss record. In the end, you will have faced essentially all the teams enough of a – I mean, the NFL, sometimes you play a division. You know, one division plays another division, and that other division is better than the whatever. You know, like, you don't play every team an equal number. Every team doesn't play the same number of teams. But still, there's enough quantity to kind of smooth out the edges of unfairness. Winning only against inferior opponents on Dark and Dark Elevation to earn a title shot. If AW wants to tell that story, I'm willing to live with that, but then tell the story. Right before Shafir comes out, or as she's coming out, say she's getting a title shot because here is her record the past 2 months. And then show clips of her hitting a finisher and scoring a three count on six or seven opponents on Dark. And go, she's got momentum. She's beating opponents. One after another in record length. You can tell your story. It resembles what Jade did on her march to winning a title. Get people excited. Set it up so that when Cargo wins in 2 minutes, it feels like she accomplished something, as opposed to, as you said, Javier, it was a match that they couldn't bother to give any context to, that was a backdrop to have live commentary and somebody who still has stolen property and nobody's bothered to say, give it back or you're fired, which is dumb too.
I agree with that. That would have made this match better and seemingly have some stakes. You and Todd Martin have talked for many months now, maybe even years, about the need for a quality control person in AEW who just sort of looks at everything from a logical standpoint, and they have not hired that person as far as we know. While Vicky Guerrero, I have not missed her cackling on Dynamite. I'm interested in at least Nyla Rose. I think what she's doing is she's a known shit poster on Twitter, and so she's taking that persona, that kind of smart-ass persona, and trying to create something new for herself on Dynamite. And I can't tell yet, because I think it's mostly been on Rampage, and I can't tell yet if it's going to work, but I'm all for them, you know, performers trying to evolve their gimmicks and to evolve depth as a character. And it has the potential to be entertaining, because she's quite entertaining on Twitter at times. And so I'd like to see if it works. But I don't know that we're going to get that. I think she's just being lined up to lose to Jade in five awful minutes at Full Gear or the Full Gear pre-show.
Javier, anything else you want to close with or
yeah,
maybe
well,
not close with? But anyway.
Since you brought up the championship eliminator match, I like the concept of that in ROH, because I think that's the first time I ever heard about it, which the idea was that you had your champion usually wrestle a multi-person match where if one of them pins them, they get a title shot, but if the champion pins all the opponents, they don't get a shot. And it was also done in cases on a one-on-one basis where a heel trying to avoid having to face a babyface that's coming after him. He says, okay, I'll give you a shot. If you pin me, you get a title shot. If I pin you, you can never challenge for the title. That's usually the way that concept's been used, which would have been a good way to explain the Jade Cargo Marina Shafir thing, where because since Shafir is part mm-hmm. of Rose's group, that Jade could have said, okay, I want to get my hands on her, and I'll offer her this championship eliminator, and if she could beat me, she'll get an actual title shot. Otherwise, if I beat her, she can't be around for any more title shots. That sort of thing, that would have made more sense, as opposed to the Lee Moriarty one, because, I mean, that just makes – is Lee Moriarty in a position where there's any chance that he's going to be a threat to John Moxley's championship, outside of the off chance of winning, you know, one of their really weirdly booked tournaments where, you know, somebody who's never won a match gets to be put in a tournament, one of those cases, because it just feels weird that they would have that be the championship eliminator match and not use that and not save that for something that's, you know, that makes more sense as opposed to just, you know, having John Moxley, you know, give it to him to Lee Moriarty.
Yeah, I mean, there's a background to Eliminator concept. It hasn't been officially introduced or explained or well executed by AEW, and it's just one of the issues of it's like Tony Khan running AEW, trying to run ROH or get ROH going, running a, you know, overseeing a football team, overseeing a soccer team. There's just too much, you know. It's slow down and focus on, you know, I mean, if Tony just ran AEW and it was only a 2-hour Dynamite show, I mean, whether he alone or bringing in help, he would have found time to weed through candidates or you know, ask around and find one or two really key support people. It's just Dynamite would be a better show, and part of it would mean fewer titles and making the matches that you do feature matter more, and that's just, you know, it's the rapid fire tons of titles. Tons of short title matches without buildup or explanation for why someone is getting a title shot or a chance to earn a title shot. It's not my favorite style of wrestling booking. You know, it isn't. And I wish title matches felt more important, more scarce, and more earned. And there was a logical context to who got them and why. But that's certainly not. It goes against the spirit of their initial press release about being a sports league, a new wrestling league that's going to be more sports based. But that's not what Tony Khan does. Eric,
if title matches were proven to pop ratings, I guess I'd be a little more okay with it. But I don't, you know, when you have that many every week of many different flavors of belts and you can't even keep track of them all unless you have a big board, dry erase board in your, wherever you watch TV. They lose their effectiveness, right?
Even if they were a draw, I don't think they can remain a draw the way AEW presents them, where title shots are handed out like candy to almost anybody based on criteria that's not explained. And some of them are mismatches. They're short. And sometimes they're not, the title team match isn't even the focus of the segment, because someone's standing on the stage taking away from it. And then there's no follow-up afterwards. There's no agony of defeat. There's no, well, this challenger had a setback. Well, let's talk to them about the loss. It's just moving on to the next thing. And, yeah, it's just...
At least the rankings are gone, right?
Yeah. I mean, the rankings were kind of a fiasco and a pain to Tony if he's paying attention to people making fun of it on Twitter, but eliminating them doesn't change the TV presentation much. They're still, you know, showing the records on the bottom of the screen, but not really giving context to them. Javier, anything else before we roll?
I believe that's it. Since we did talk about Game of Thrones briefly, Daenerys Targaryen would have been a better example than Hitler on Monday. That would have been another one.
Yeah, good point. I love that this stuff just eats away at you, Javier, for days.
Yeah. My brother called me out on this one, so he was like, "How can you forget about Game of Thrones?" I'm not kidding. I was researching tropes because I know it's a trope, and I know there's a lot more movies that come to mind. So I have done some research. That's all I had. And stay tuned for the primer for the Saudi show that may or may not be happening, depending on world events.
Yes, exactly. All right, Javier, always great hearing from you. Thanks.
Yeah, have a good one.
Yep, you too. All right. I want to read this email, Eric. JB from Detroit said, "What is with all these title or title eliminator matches, and what is the criteria for getting these matches?" It's like he's listening to us. Penta, as a singles wrestler, Matt Menard and Lee Moriarty, none of these guys have done anything of significance in quite some time, if at all. There needs to be some better kayfabe cases made to justify these matches happening once, sometimes twice a week on AEW programming. This also applies to Marina Shafir getting a TNT title shot against Jade. Didn't Jade just easily dispatch of her a few months ago? Speaking of Jade, was tonight the beginning of a face turn for her being paired against Nyla? It would seem odd to me to do the turn before she took her first loss, so could that be on the horizon? They seem to be layering it on extra thick with a post-match beatdown of Kira Hogan. I don't know that Jade's supposed to be a heel, Eric. I think she's morphed into she's just Jade. And because she's, when's the last time she did anything or said anything overly heelish? She's just the supremely self-confident athlete.
She's mean to the baddies. On a consistent basis. Still, you know, selfish and vain. I think it's just a heel versus heel program because they've run out of people to feed to her, maybe.
Yeah.
To Jamie from Detroit's broader point, why are all these title eliminator matches happening and what, you know, all of that kind of stuff? I mean, it's pretty simple. Tony Khan needs to pump up ratings or at least maintain what he has, you know, under a million, over a million, depending on the week. He won't get that this week because of the World Series, and I think he knew it, which is why
he Dynamite probably wouldn't have gotten it otherwise, honestly.
Right, yeah, Dynamite kind of – that's why Dynamite –
the show was not lost.
Yeah, Dynamite was going to take a hit this week, and that's why it kind of sucked relative to, you know, more enjoyable it's more enjoyable most of the time. And so, you know, he's got to keep these ratings high. He is at a star power deficit right now because Adam Cole, Adam Page, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, CM Punk, all gone from television right now. Miro either shooting a TV series or just being criminally underutilized. He's one of the best performers they have in AEW. And so this is going to I'm guessing keeping Jon Moxley, Brian Danielson, and Chris Jericho on TV every week, wrestling every week, in, you know, sometimes compelling title matches, sometimes squash matches that are, they call them eliminators, will continue until Tony Khan gets his new TV deal with Warner Brothers Discovery.
All right. JB ended with this. Finally, the new storyline with Jay Lethal, Jeff Jarrett, and the team. Is that going to be the angle that finally splits up Darby and Sting? Jarrett kept referencing how Sting had become Darby's greatest weakness and how much the angle seemed to be centered around Sting, who didn't even appear himself. I thought this was, you know, Jarrett is known on Twitter for, you know, posting platitudes as if they're, deep thoughts with Jack Handy, but like these profound statements, and they're just things that, you know, they put on posters at those mall stores. And you know, what was his phrase? Things that preoccupy you, doom you, or something like that. And so this just, it was just, you know, perfect quintessential Jeff Jarrett. Joel Gertner ruined that word for me. Or made it great. I don't know what. But, I'm trying to find in my report the quote. But still, I actually think this was a good use of that phrase in the sense that it was Darby staring at the stage waiting for Sting to come out that caused Darby to then be vulnerable to get hit from behind. The quote is, whatever you worship becomes your weakness. And he's, you know, he said his worshiping a Sting has become his weakness. So I don't think it's turning Sting. I just think it's a heel saying to Darby that your focus on Sting is hurting you, but that will actually backfire on Jarrett. That's kind of my take.
Yeah, I would say nobody wants to see Darby as a heel versus Sting or Sting as a heel versus Darby. You can't get people to boo Sting at this point. He's a legend and everybody's amazed at what he puts himself through. There's probably a fun column or a piece in ranking all of the fake Sting angles. There's been no shortage of them over the years.
Barry Windham was the first.
Yeah, I was going to – I had that in my notes. 32 years ago at UIC Pavilion, University of Illinois Chicago Pavilion, it's called something else now, but it's still there. They had the Halloween Havoc 1990 WCW pay-per-views, the very stiff Steiners versus Nasty Boys match where Rick just clobbered Jerry Sags with a chair and busted him open. But that main event – teenage Eric was there, and Barry Windham was the fake Sting, and Wade Keller, who is a very good photographer on the side, in addition to being a writer and a podcaster, got an amazing picture of Barry Windham. And this was back when you would send out color Polaroid printouts with the torch, I think just about every week. And I think I probably still have that one because the shit-eating grin on Barry Windham's face painted up as fake Sting, it was amazing. Now, in the building, unfortunately, I was sitting on the other side. I had no idea what happened until somebody explained it to me later after the show. But
that's the thing. There was no social media. There was no podcasting. People were left wondering when the pay-per-view went off the air, who was that? What happened? And I got the photo. I printed it up, put it on the cover of the torch, mailed it out. And people were getting it in the mail like 3 days later going, oh, my God, it was Barry Windham. And look, this is the best image we've seen because there was a delay before the next WCW show where they would even address it. And so my photo was actually the way people found out who it was and how and what Windham looked like dressed as Sting.
Yeah, I think it's likely that's how I found out. For all the reasons you stated. Jeff Farmer, NWO Sting, I don't know. The list, I'm sure, from Impact TNA goes on and on and on. But tonight's was a very flat fake Sting angle. Cole Carter is, the silence spoke volumes.
I love Shivani going, it's Sting! And it's like, no, it's not going to be Tony. Sorry. I don't know if we knew that at the time, but maybe we were suspicious of it. Go ahead.
I feel like on one of the shows, might have been Dynamite, might have been Rampage, Darby had a promo where he talked about how he's asked Sting to back off and let him fight his own battles. How he was going to kick Jay Lethal's ass. Yeah. Yeah, probably happy after he got the garage door dropped on him. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Zach in Texas emailed. He tends to be positive about AEW in his email. So let's get his take on the show. He said, gentlemen, this has been a roller coaster of a show. I can see both sides of the Jeff Jarrett argument, but you have to respect the man's hustle. Also, he has the credentials to pull off the shtick he's doing, unlike Dan Lambert or JBL. It doesn't hurt that he's using My World, which will always be the best theme in TNA history. The Daddy-Ass birthday bash cracked me up. The adoption certificate actually said William Daddy-Ass Gunn, just chef's kiss. Let us never say TK doesn't have a little petty in him, because bringing back Colt Cabana was a clear big double middle finger to one CM Punk. I'm bearing the lead, though, because we're getting Shibata against Orange Cassidy on Rampage. Who had that match on your 2022 bingo card? You can say a lot of things about AEW, but you can't call it dull. So, Eric, thoughts?
Zach Cadorn on Twitter is currently having a crisis because YouTube TV did not record it for him. I suggested that maybe this was one he could skip. It wasn't that good.
Zach is my co-host on this week's flagship, and we're going to talk AEW.
Yeah, no, for sure he has to see it for his job. But Zach got involved in the Twitter discussion and called the show interesting. And interesting is the word people use when they don't want to insult something that sucks or that sucked, right?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting, right? It's the diplomatic, I don't know if it's Midwestern, part of Midwestern nice, right? When you don't want to break bad, you just insult your host. Something's interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I like the Swerve Scott thing. I thought it was – I don't think – did they acknowledge that Swerve Scott had kidnapped Daddy Ass Billy Gunn on Rampage last week, and they did that horrible WWE style not even WWE, NXT 2.0 style angle that didn't make any sense. And how did Daddy Ass get out of the kidnapping? Did they explain that? I don't know. All of that said, the weak part of that, I do like Swerve Strickland. Wasn't that huge of a fan when he came in. Like the signing now, and I think they booked that 8-man tag for next week. And I apparently where this is heading at the pay per view, my guess would be it's going to be a 4-way for the tag titles, right? Either that, or you've got finally you get the FTR Ass Boys match, and you get the rubber match between. Swerve in Our Glory, your favorite tag team name, and the Acclaimed, which Tony Khan tends to like to book so that more people get on these pay-per-views, not fewer people. And so my guess would be that's going to be the setup for that.
All right. We've run long. I feel bad because I tried to get to Ryan earlier. So, Ryan, let me try to sneak you in here. Thanks for calling back. What is on your mind about Dynamite? We'll do this rapid fire.
Okay. My question's on Sting. Is he possibly the reason why Jeff Jarrett's back in that he feels comfortable working with Jeff since they've had so many matches over the years, and maybe it was his idea since maybe they're pretty good friends too, and he just enjoys working with them.
Interesting. Are we going to see a Sting Jeff Jarrett match? And yeah, is Sting willing to return to take on a guy who will keep him safe like Jeff? Eric.
Oh, I hope we don't see a Sting Jeff Jarrett match. The combined ages would break triple digits, right? There's no point in it. You may see them in a tag match. I think that's probably likely, right? It may even be likely at the pay-per-view, Darby and Sting versus Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. For me personally, that'll be my bathroom break on the show, and not because of Sting and Darby. I think Tony Khan tweeted, to answer your question in a non-sarcastic way, Tony Khan tweeted that Jeff Jarrett is his director of business development, and he's going to try and book more buildings for them, and that's why he's in the company, to help beef up the front office.
All right, Ryan, back to you.
Question on Mike Tyson. Do you see him working with any good heels currently since he's making his return on Friday as a caller commentator?
Eric?
I mean, they seemed to be building a Tyson-Jericho match the last time Tyson was on. Is that right? I mean, I have this vague memory of Tyson in the ring with a reality show star and some other legit tough guys and this whole entourage, and Jericho's previous stable was in there with him, and then they never had the match, right? There was never any follow through. It was just a random summer angle that was cool, somewhat cool, and filled TV time. I don't know who would you want to. So you want to, if you'd want to put him, if there's going to be a match, you probably need to have it be a tag match, right? I don't think you want Mike Tyson wrestling a singles match without his experience. And you would want, I think Tyson would be the baby face, right? So it would have to be a heel. MJF would have been a candidate just to get the rub, but I don't even know that he needs it anymore. Wait, bail me out here. Who could, what heel could step up and take on Mike Tyson? Jeff Jarrett?
Who else would make any sense? Hook, get Hook in there and have him beat Tyson. Let's get Hook.
Is Mike Tyson rub. Ryan and Wade, do you think Mike Tyson is doing the job in this scenario, or is he going to be on the winning side?
No, I don't. But Anderson Silva did the job for Jake Paul, so true. You know, I mean, money talks. Kip Sabian. Remember when he made his triumphant comeback, and now he's been just disappeared from Dynamite completely?
He's on he was on one of the shows, the YouTube shows this week.
Yeah, but my point is, like,
hairstyle always wigged me out, yeah.
That's why, like, Jeff Jarrett, you know, people don't have to worry. Jeff's going to end up on Dark and Rampage. There'll be weeks that go by where you won't hear about him, and it'll just be like Kip Sabian. Kip's back! And it's like, oh, no, just pretend he wasn't. If you're the million people who watch Dynamite. Yeah. All right, Ryan.
I got a question on a conspiracy theory I heard. Is anyone from CM Punk's close circle that's currently in the company being punished a little bit? Like, could you tell, like, I don't know, who would that be? I just thought that maybe, like, they were doing maybe more jobs based on the conspiracy theory from what I heard.
Eric, I missed a little bit of what he said, but if you caught it, you can answer.
Is anybody, he asked whether anybody is being doing more jobs as punishment who are were aligned with CM Punk. I admit, Ryan, I have not heard anything like that.
Yep, and no, I haven't heard anything like that either. Have you heard rumors, Ryan? You're out there on you know, message boards or Reddit or social media. Any rumors of that?
No, I'm not usually on those. It's usually people that are involved in the wrestling business, like Cornette, Russo, Pritchard, those types of people that I listen to.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. But no rumors of that. Yeah, I haven't heard that either. I haven't seen evidence of it either. I mean, Punk didn't have a big circle of people. He doesn't keep a lot of people real close. He had people who liked him and he talked to, but it wasn't quite like a little entourage like Cody had of, you know, Cody's boys, Cody's guys who hung out with him in the locker room. You know, so anyway. Anything else, Ryan?
Do you know anything about the scissoring at the World Series? Was that just a joke they were making, or did that really happen? Like someone hit a home run and they scissored their teammate, or were they just making that up tonight?
I assume it happened. Eric, do you know?
There was a clip. I think it was the Phillies who were doing it once.
Yeah.
Is my recollection.
Cool. All right, Ryan, appreciate the call.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think of the birthday celebration with the Acclaimed and the Guns, Eric?
It was a it was too long. It was too WWE for me, for my tastes. They didn't have a birthday cake, so that was a positive, because then someone didn't end up in the birthday cake. They used it to forward the FTR Gun Club feud. I personally would have liked to. FTR is actually finally going to defend the New Japan Tag Team titles, the IWGP Tag Team titles, in Japan on this weekend. I think it's Saturday, maybe Sunday. I would have given them the week off and let them get a little less jet lagged, but nope, they're going to be apparently in Japan, in Baltimore, heading to Japan, and then next Wednesday they're going to be back in Boston in that eight-man tag. And the eight-man tag sets up interestingly because it's FTR and the Acclaimed are the faces, and the Gun Club clearly been defined as heels. Swerve and Our Glory, you know, one of those two guys is a heel, but not both. So it sets up a very weird dynamic. What did you think of the segment?
I didn't like this but I think it might be working, so it might not matter how I feel about it. I think it feels a little too much about, I don't know, it feels a little bit too much about Billy Gunn in a way, but I don't mean it seems more about him than others. I mean, it was his birthday celebration, so of course he's going to be the focus, but I just don't know ultimately if the Acclaimed wanting to be adopted by Billy Gunn, as cute as it might seem in the moment to everybody and how much fun they're having with it, if it is actually going to get the acclaim to the heights that they could be at. But I think Max Caster seems to be having fun. He's smiling. His interaction with the fan seems genuine. I still think he is a star in the making before our very eyes. And I think that Anthony Bowens was really strong on the microphone. Like, I thought it was one of his better just performances if you strip away the kind of silliness of it all. He seemed more confident on the microphone, more in command. So I think there's some good things to pluck out of it. It seems to be working. So the thing, if it wasn't working, I'd be all over it. But it seems to be working. So even if it's not for me, and even if I think ultimately it's a little too self-indulgent and silly, and it might delay what could be the Acclaimed becoming bigger stars, it does seem like it might be an important chapter. I mean, as they said, AEW is always acclaimed every Wednesday. You know what I mean? They are earning TV time with these. So, yeah, I guess I just consider myself having mixed feelings. I don't love them, but yeah.
I think the only thing anyone's going to remember about this segment, if they remember anything at all, will be it was when they finally introduced the foam fingers, which are going to sell a ton, right? Oh, my God. It's like the whole crowd is going to be having those things. And I think it will also serve as a good barometer for AEW when they are in a city and the Foam Fingers don't sell as well. The Acclaimed might be losing steam if and when that ever happens, right? When our foam finger barometer, scissor fingers, our sales are down 50% this week. It's a new metric that needs to be tracked, I think.
Yeah. I should say, too, by the way, if anyone normally records Dynamite and it didn't record for them, I know Zach had that issue. I had issue with that, too, and I've got DirecTV Stream. He's got YouTube TV. They did not label the episode number in the data that they entered, which means if you have a bunch of Dynamites on your library or DVR, it seems like it's system-wide, whatever system you're on, it's at the bottom of all your recordings. Because it's episode zero or blank. So if you have, like, I've got 30 episodes in my DirecTV Stream library, it's at the bottom of that. It's before the April 13th episode. So it's probably on your DVR. It probably isn't at the top where it belongs. So anyone who is listening to this who made it this far on the show and you're frustrated, not only will it be available on demand, but it's probably on your DVR right now, just at the bottom of the listing.
Wait, are you saying that there was a lack of attention to detail in AEW?
I think this is probably more a TNT TBS thing, but I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Man, we're running long.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Brian, I know you called. I'm going to give you like 1 minute to rant and then we're going to sign off here. Brian, you called in a little bit after we got rolling on calls, but welcome and give us some closing words before we sign off here.
All right. I'll say that Excalibur, I'm getting sick and tired of him. His commentary drags things down, and I think Ian Riccoboni should be the main commentator because he makes things flow and he's not always, oh, I'm in a hurry all the time. So, yeah, Excalibur sucks. That's my first point. My second point is, God, that women's segment was horrific. The Marina Shafir and Jade Cargill match, that should have been on Dark. Shafir sucks, and she... When you can't even learn from your husband, who's arguably one of the best wrestlers in the world, Roderick Strong, you should just hang it up. Just give it up and move on. Work in an office somewhere. And I really didn't need to hear the commentary on that. That segment was horrific, and I bet in the quarter hours the viewers will hemorrhage during that segment. And my third point was that on what was almost a subpar show, the Toni Storm Jamie Hayter's setup was really good. I enjoyed that, and looking forward to that match. I'm just wondering, and I'll hang up. Just wondering if you guys think there's going to be a title change there, or does Storm retain? And thanks, and have a good night.
Cool. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate you keeping it concise too, because we're running so long here. Eric, title change?
So Jamie Hayter was really over at All Out. I don't know, is she as hot as she used to be? Are the fans still oohing and eyeing over her and her feats of strength and her ring attire that accentuates her features and her kind of, you know, cool British heel accent stuff? I don't know. I get, my gut is that she's not as over as she was then, and maybe they missed the window with her. I guess it depends on who you want to face. Thunder Rosa, a name that hasn't been mentioned for weeks and weeks and months now. If she comes back and they do Tony's the interim champion, right? Do you want to change the interim belt, or do you want to have, do you want the face dynamic with Storm and Rosa, or maybe Rosa comes back as a heel with a chip on her shoulder? I don't know. What do you think?
I think they keep the belt on Tony, and I think they should. I don't think people are popping for Jamie Hayter, but I think it's the pockets of fans who are attending shows, the diminishing number of people buying live tickets. I don't think they've translated that to TV other than listening to crowd reactions to her enough to then pull the trigger on her being the champion right now. I think you want that to be a bigger deal, built up better and framed better. Before you do it. And I think they should stick with Tony Storm. I don't think you should hop the potato with belt, interim or otherwise.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement there. Cool. I agree with Brian that the setup, the video package they shared, it seems like the quality of that production was the kind they do for that preview show for the pay-per-view that airs after Rampage. I can't remember what they call them, where it's really super high quality. Like it looks major league. It looks like they just broke off a little piece of that for tonight's show. And I'm all for them doing that to build up pay-per-view matches and not just saving it all for a half hour show that a lot fewer fans are going to see.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Excellent. Eric, thank you as always. Appreciate your being on the show.
Thank you, Wade.
Yep. Thanks to our listeners, and we'll talk to you all next time on the flagship tomorrow.